It's art, bitch! It's fucking art!
The time has come. The hours, minutes, and seconds have wound down. The wait is over, folks. Another 365 days has passed on this godforsaken planet. And though I think a lot of us are coming out the back end of it, maybe feeling somewhat worse for wear, maybe a little insecure, and we're all probably up by about 3 new mental health diagnoses than we had this time last year. None of that matters, because for the next few hours, we're going to forget all about that. We're going to go to our collective happy place that we get to go to once a year, where we, as a community, all get to yell loudly about all the things we like and revel in their greatness. That's right. Welcome once again, everyone. Welcome to the 12th annual Soxcast Game of the Year Spectacular, where we celebrate the best and the brightest of all the video games that we enjoyed this year. Today, myself and my distinguished co-hosts will be going over our lists with entries 10 through 6. But the most important part, and the maybe even the most...
the majority.
The overwhelming part this year is when we get to hear from you, the beautiful, lovely listeners. I almost called them viewers, but there are people that watch these on YouTube, so that kind of counts. We got another avalanche of fantastic and varied listener lists this year, and I do mean quite literally an avalanche, full of surprises that are sure to delight you and us, because I don't even think Rhett knows half of the list entries at this point. He was just up at 4 a.m. slapping these things into our outline. So we're all going to be real surprised. So hopefully we can all collectively come out of these shows feeling real good about enjoying things and maybe even having a brand new thing or two to add to our lists of things to check out. How's it going, y'all? Ready? You ready? We're ripping the bandage off. It's here. It's finally time.
I'm so fucking
Let's
ready.
Go. Ollie. Let's go. To my immediate virtual.
I'm so ready.
To my immediate.
Oh, Batman is here. Wow.
Hey, guests. Who knew you had guest spots? I guess when you get enough listener lists, they just kind of know you're popular now. So Batman's here.
I was just doing a silly voice. I wasn't trying to do Christian Bale Batman like a 2008 talk show host.
Like, everybody either thinks it's Christian Bale Batman or Noob Saibot from the newer Mortal Kombat games. So
I meant it to be like erotically charged. Like, I'm so full.
That was the least erotic thing that those may be the least erotic sounds that have ever like come from you. Just
all right. Give us your Polly. Give us your best erotic.
I'm not gonna do
I'm
that.
So ready.
I don't owe you that. I don't owe you a thing.
Red, give us your best erotic. I'm so
absolutely
ready.
Not. We're gonna be here for 4 hours.
To my immediate right. Virtual right. Despite all his rage, he is still just a PSO mage.
Beautiful.
It's Red.
Yep.
How you doing, Rhett? Well, that's a terrible question to be asking me at this point in time.
How dare you? So, I'm leaving.
So let's not. Let's just say Rhett's just happy to be here.
I am.
Mm-hmm. And to my immediate virtual left, he's back. All you had to do was ask. It's John.
He's back. It's Jack.
Okay.
No, that's John.
That's you're John. I'm no, pretty sure. Yeah, I'm John. Last I checked your social security card, which I have a perfect photocopy of for reasons that shall remain disclosed.
Yeah, and my passport.
And your passport. Yeah, you're still John. You're still John.
Jack is like a nickname for John.
It
even
is.
Though they have the same number of
it
letters
yeah.
and syllables. And yeah. It doesn't take any less time to pronounce.
It's one of those shortenings of a name that doesn't make it any shorter at all, and it's just a weird yeah. alternative. And I think anybody that's named Jack and wants to be named John or vice versa probably should just be shot. That's just
probably.
How
I, I've never gone by Jack. Please don't call me
that's
Jack.
That's good. I will never call you Jack. I will call you a jack off at various occasions when fine. You are in fact being a jack off, but
frequently. Probably
Which
many
is
times
frequently,
on this podcast.
We've got 12 years of episodes. I've probably called you a jack off at some point. But we are dilly-dallying. We are going to be here for a very long time. So we need to go ahead and start diving into things. And since it is the listeners who have stepped up their effing game this year, why don't we go ahead and just kind of... We've got to start putting a dent in this pile, right, Rhett? Like, this is something...
The only way out is through.
The only way out is through. So, John, I do believe you have the first listener list of the year to get us kicked off. Let's go.
This is from our pal. This is from our pal Nipples and Smiles. Hey, Nipples and Smiles here. Hopefully this isn't too long-winded nor riddled with typos I missed. Enjoy. Number 3, Digimon. I admit I might be a bit biased since I'm a 13-year-old goth kid at heart still. However, this is my favorite RPG this year by a good margin. If you are not already a Digimon fan, there is very little I can tell you to say here to sway you. It's basically Pokemon, but the cute little critters turn into guns, fetish creatures, or fetish creatures with guns. Correct. Despite the bland start, there are tons of flashy locations and a decently... difficult combat system that really expects you to be paying attention as the game goes on. Some aspects have had a bit of a downgrade over previous entries, such as the Digifarm, as well as story gaining certain ranks of Digimon. Though that said, I still highly recommend this game, especially if you're feeling burnt out by the current state of Pokemon. Number 2, Silent Hill F. I'll admit when I started playing this game, I did not expect it to make its way onto this list, let alone in this slot, and it wasn't until well after my first playthrough of the game that it did. This game is utterly captivating throughout. The story and music really shine. However, the fact that the story does require multiple playthroughs to get the full picture may not be for everyone. Even still, I would place this game among the first two in the series in terms of quality. The game does get criticism for its combat, and rightly so in some cases, especially in the back half. While it can be trivialized in subsequent playthroughs, it can really slow you down. But what's a Silent Hill game without jank combat?
Amen.
Edit, me from the future here. Literally the day after I wrote this, they issued a patch that addresses most of my issues. Don't play games at launch, folks. They cost more and are worse, or you are racing to finish the game before the next scandal breaks. Okay, I have to break format and rules for a moment because the studio did a thing that I thought was impossible. A new game has come out in the Doom franchise and has rendered me so bored while playing that I nearly nodded off. This should be considered a great sin. I can count on one hand the number of games I refunded. I've never thought a Doom game would be among them, and here we are. Thus, I have to give it the biggest disappointment of the year.
God damn.
Oh, dear.
Damn. Anyway, on to number 1. StarCraft Brood War.
Holy shit.
As time goes on, I'm more and more convinced that this game is a cosmic fluke. Nothing was like it, and nothing will ever be like it again. Even the people who made it can't replicate its magic. Mm-hmm. Despite being 27 years old and long since lost official support by Blizzard, it still has a stronger competitive scene than most contemporary games. A strong online community still exists, as well as a strong pro circuit that is still tons of fun to watch. If competitive play is not your thing, there is still tons of custom map play online, which has birthed entire video game genres over the years, such as tower defense and MOBAs, among others. And the single player experience still holds up among the best in the genre, even against its modern counterparts. If I was forced to think of a single plane against the state of this game, it's that the HD graphics still look weird to me, but that's a side effect of playing for decades. Thank you for the list, Nipples and Smiles.
Also, thank you for still having the best username on our Discord.
Absolutely. And they're not all that long, folks. Don't worry.
Damn, the Shade Against Doom, I forgot about
that. Yeah, that game. I know, like, one person that liked that game, but everybody else that I've talked to is just like, wow, what are you doing?
Fuck, what are you dooming?
What are you... Damn. Already out with the bangers, man. You gotta keep it up, because we got, like, 4 more hours of this shit.
Polly!
Yes, I have.
You have a listener list for us.
I have a listener list, and this comes from...
Just keep going.
This comes from our good pal and fellow Toho fanatic, Gesh86. Says, hello, Polly, Rhett, John. Due to rigorous game backlog cleaning, I've probably never played as many different games in a year as I have in 2025. Still, it was way easy to make this list because I've kept frequently ranking for myself over the course of the year. Very much unlike how I did in 2023 and 2024. Funny how well things work out if one keeps their head organized, isn't it? All right, John, you're going to want to go ahead and get the first tally mark up for this one.
These are Silent Hill F.
No particular order. This is number 1, Claire Obscure Expedition 33.
Yep.
I heard you were expecting that the Sox community would not be particularly drawn to this one. If this got only one Game of the Year vote, it shall be mine. I jumped on this one in late May after it had taken the internet by storm to very quickly find out that all of the hype was deserved. Combat was
Combat has very high strategic depth. The art style is extremely unique and beautiful. The writing and character conversations are really refreshing, ranging from absurd to heart-wrenching, but as always, at the appropriate moment. Finally, the soundtrack is in the leagues of Nier.
Goddamn.
That's
having just played Nier.
That's a pretty good. Yeah, if anybody could judge it. So Rhett's going to be playing Clair Obscur after the new year.
Oh, fuck.
Number two, it does my heart to see this one. Danganronpa V3 Killing Harmony. A Christmas present last year, but so impactful that it never left me. I had not played a Spike Chunsoft puzzle adventure detective game for a long time, so this came when I had maximum hunger. I had such a great time throughout. I even appreciated its incredibly controversial fandom-dividing ending. Any Danganronpa feels that it is always indebted to top its predecessor in how outlandish it gets. This was perhaps the only way that made sense for it to conclude. My unironically favorite character, the cast, is Miyu Iruma, the cum dumpster herself. A completely absurd cum dumpster. Well, I didn't even have to say it. She wants to be called that of a person. That's the benefits of just not pre-reading these as you get surprised. Number three, Cross the Boundaries. I played relatively few Toho fan games this year and even slept on some of the bigger releases. Examples being Toho Dystopian, Marissa Liar Top Mountain, Fantasy Maiden Wars 4. The demo of Labyrinth of Toho Tri shouldn't count, so the bronze goes to this puzzle adventure horror game about the Scarlet Ceiling Club, Maribel and Renko. My expectations were very small due to humble production value and low traffic on the shop page, only to be greatly exceeded. Similarly to the second place, this was just the kind of game I was in dire need of this October. With that, I wish you and everyone else at the Sox community an equally good or even better next year for gaming. Bispod.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gesh.
Thank you, Gesh.
I always got to get at least one Toho game in there.
Absolutely. And that Crossing the Boundaries, he did a video on that recently, and it does look really good. So definitely probably on my radar.
I'm ready to have some more Toho joy in my
man. I got a Labyrinth of Toho Tri release date. That's all I need, man. January 26th. I'm out of here. Y'all ain't gonna hear from me anymore. Red, do you have another listener list for us?
I've got this one. This comes in from Luigi Master. Hello, Soxcast. This is Luigi Master. No, this is actually Sayara.
We got japed. I can't believe it.
I was like, who's Luigi Master?
2025 is over. I think I played three games. I can't remember. I've been pulling the slot machine in Clover Pit over and over again. Last year, I mentioned how Balatro was a game I enjoyed a lot. Clover Pit is essentially the slot machine version of that, just exasperatingly grotesque in its appearance. Might be my only complaint with it. Video games have been an escape from thinking, so games that are simple like this help me, though it does not help my abrasive Gamba addiction. These aren't numbered, so it just kind of jumps from game to game.
Yeah, yeah.
PSO is back in full swing.
There
in my
we go.
Heart. Has it been a year since I started back? I miss it dearly. Also, the final, quotes, game is Picross. Oh, John, I'm sorry. Just the series in general. I must have gotten like 10 different Picrosses on my Nintendo ready to be completed, though I did beat the one that had the VTuber girl in it. Jufute Rodin's Guide for Pixel Museum. I strongly appreciated its use of artwork and her critique analysis of a lot of different styles of arts. Neatly packaged with a cute VTuber girl telling me about it. Nice. I think I say this every year, but thank you for all the fun. Being in the community these last many years has always been an honor, and I hope this continues onward. Let's kick 2026's ass like we did 2025 and all the years beforehand.
Did we really kick 2025's ass?
I didn't want to say that, but yeah. Let's get our ass kicked by 2026. It's not as...
Yeah, that's not as hopeful for this celebration vibe we're trying to get going. So I got one more listener list. This is an audio format, so none of us have to read. Who's ready for a nice break already?
We always we're going to get a breather every time.
Yeah, that's how we get a breather every time now, so we should stop bitching. This audio list comes from Shmeev, who is somebody that I met when I joined a horrorcore hip-hop community this year. He happened to know who I was.
Aww,
that was weird. That's never happened before. So here's my good pal Shmeev coming in 3, 2, 1, go.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy Shmeev here, just talking about some games that I really liked this year. First up is You Will Die Here Tonight. It is a just fantastic, like, puzzle game. You are one of, you play six different special forces people, investigating this big old mansion where some zombie shit's going down. And if that sounds like Resident Evil, it's because it's very heavily homaging or ripping off Resident Evil, at least with, like, the mansion design and all of that stuff. But it's also got, like, this whole meta thing going on with the way that the narrative works. But the main thing of it is that your characters are almost guaranteed to all die. Actually, they are guaranteed to all die. That's kind of part of it. And with each character's death, you are able to sort of get farther with the next character that you play as until all six of them are dead. And then you know, have to go through some stuff. I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to spoil the really cool thing about it. Go play it. It's cheap, and it's like a 2-session kind of game. You know, if you're pretty dedicated on it, you can blow through it. It was a blast. Anyway, up next, Cultic Chapter 2. Cultic Chapter 1 was fucking amazing. I was really, really happy with that when I picked it up. It's a gothic horror boomer shooter in the style of Blood, and I loved Blood. That game was fantastic, and this one is as fantastic, if not more. You know, it's definitely got a lot of modern amenities. It handles so slick. There's so much cool stuff you can do in it. It's just awesome. It's fantastic, and it was legitimately, the second chapter legitimately had some levels that were just spooky as hell in some sections, and I loved that. I didn't feel like the first one really had as much of that. You know, it was more just kind of like the blood thing. You know, blood I never really thought was all that scary. But chapter two, man, it hit it. You know, and it really nailed it down. A lot of cool levels, a lot of fun stuff. Just great. Great 10 out of 10. Go play it. Last but not least, The King is Watching. This is, like, easily my favorite game of this year. It's a city builder, you know, sort of defending against waves thing. You have a 5x5 grid that you can put buildings down on, and they only operate when they're under your gaze, which you can move around. You know, it has like a little shape that you can move around to look at buildings to make them work. And you do that to gather resources to then spend to either upgrade your gaze so you can see more and do more with it, or to build units to defend your stuff, or to, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, get the upgrades to make your army bigger and better and all that stuff. You choose kind of like the waves that come after you. It's a little bit of a risk reward thing. You know, you can make the waves harder for better stuff or all that. So it's great. It is really awesome. It's a beautiful looking game, you know, all pixel arty and stuff like that. And it's got just really, really nice art for like the, whenever you finish certain milestones in it. It's really cool. And now I will read for you the Worlds of Power Blaster Master novel by FX9. Chapter 1. Jason Frudnick stood outside the black door. Gray, steamy clouds whirled around his feet. He felt as if he were floating. There it was again.
All right.
Thank you for the wonderful list, Shmeev.
That's a good list. I think that's a good indicator that we're going to be hearing some variety here over these lists, because those are gay. Like Cultic 2 sounds real rad. I need to play the first one, though, because I love me a good-ass boomer shooter.
I was about to say, I love a good-ass boomer shooter.
Love Dusk, like, so...
I'm all into Resident Evil riffs.
Yeah, the Resident Evil riff sounds really good, too. Like, there was definitely a solid list. Thank you so much for contributing a list, Shmeev. And now it's time for us to...
Oh, are we here?
We're here. Amazing. They probably didn't even think that we were going to have lists this year. And maybe that would have been the way to go with as many listener lists as we got.
This is like we're the side dish right now.
We're the side dish this year. This one is absolutely all about the community, but that doesn't mean we don't get to participate because it's in our goddamn contracts. So, John, we can go ahead and get things kicked off with a number 10.
My number 10 is Community Delight and good friend Chris's new opus, Excise.
Oh, God, this game. Oh, baby, this game.
Bump Combat Excise XYX-YZE on chrishellsound.itch.io. This is a Bump Combat action game with a mysterious short story. I really, really enjoyed this one. It's just like, it was really fun to watch Chris like build this over the last like 2-3 years.
Yeah, that's the best part is we got to see this game come together like in whole. Yeah, and it's a huge thing.
It started off like with the idea of making like an action RPG, but then it turned into like it's a gauntlet of really, really cute game design-y bump combat like action challenges. Like instead of being like an RPG like Ease where you're exploring mazes, you're going through like a series of these really cute enemy designs and then different combinations of those enemies and different layouts. It's just like that was the number one thing I took away was like every other screen I was just going like, there's some fucking game design, there's some good honest design, it's an action game.
I have this game, I've described this game to somebody this week and I said this game has a radio in its room and it's tuned to WPOLLY, everything Polly loves in an action game that feels good.
Yeah, I cruised through it, I had such a good time. And the climactic bosses are amazing. I really like level 4. And it does the one thing there's a specific twist to the final level that I really like.
Oh, it's devious. It's real good.
That is, it's very dramatic in a way that games don't usually let themselves be. Mm-hmm. The Arbiter fight is probably the highlight of the whole thing for me. I really like that. So this is a delight. And it's a free download on chrishellsound.itch.io. Thanks so much, Chris.
Yeah, like this game rips.
Cool.
As John Thayer would say.
Check it out next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like if you're an Ease fan, like there's no excuse. Like, and it's got a great little arcade mode where it strips out the story and you can just play these fun little levels. I love the aesthetic as well because it's really riffing on like Mega Man Battle Network dungeon design.
Yes.
And it's still doing its own thing. It's just very clearly inspired by that.
Yeah, like Sylvie RPG last year, this is another one that is somebody kept following the production of Angeline Era from ALG6 Studios. Mm-hmm. It was like, this looks so good, and then made a different, smaller game while waiting for that one to come out. And then it finally came out earlier this month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, X-YZE. It's a great, great, great little game.
Bump Combat Era.
We're back,
totally
baby.
Stopped at the Game Awards.
Yeah, it should have swept.
Should have swept the Game Awards. All right, who's next?
I do be next. So my number 10, I have good news, everybody. Fantastic news. It turns out that after 35 years, I can finally report that Super Mario World actually isn't mostly kind of boring. I got into some Super Mario World Kaizo ROM hacks this year.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So
John game of the year.
John's pick last year for game of the year being Kaizo ROM hacks. That put Love Yourself on my to-do list this year. And I finally got around to that in March and I think that this game is a really, 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 really good one to start with. I want to say I spent an afternoon or two kind of like playing around with a Kaizo kind of practice ROM first, where you kind of learn various things like re-grabs and the like, or the visual language that these hacks use and have developed over the course of their existence now, where you can basically sight read levels if you're good enough.
God, I feel so good to sight read a Kaizo level, or like a big chunk of it.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. And I ended up finishing the entirety of Love Yourself in a couple of days. I think that is just a great little introductory hack that it has incredibly well thought out pacing, and the challenges, the escalation, and the climax goes big in all the ways. I love any game I play to go big. This game has a thing that Rhett loves. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's there. And when I got to it, I thought, yeah, this is fantastic. But well, love yourself.
Don't keep me hanging.
Love yourself. It's got an escape sequence.
Yes.
Okay. Love yourself is sort of where I got it. I get it. I know why people play these now. And I ended up playing a bunch of littler ones. Like I think that of jumps and platforms, like if I had to recommend if I had to recommend a solid first one after you just like learn some basic stuff, like just re-grabs mostly, really good. Super Cindy World is really cute.
It looks real nice. Of Jumps and Platforms was the first one I played where I just actually played it to the end and had a good time.
Yeah, like and they're not as fancy or as full of custom code silliness as stuff like Love Yourself or some of the other things that we could probably bring up here, but it just solidified the good vibes that I got from Love Yourself. And I think a special note, Chicanery Beginner Edition is the one that kind of blew me away the most with its just absolutely insane and weirdly inventive level designs that aren't just strictly about killing you. They're just making you do things in a Mario game that you wouldn't normally think about doing, or playing with the Mario game mechanics in a way that just is so out of like the left field and like you don't expect it. And so I think that Chicanery Beginner Edition is probably my favorite hack mechanically, but I just love the narrative shape of Love Yourself so much that
it's so sweet. It's so nice.
I think the best part about like throwing yourself at the Kaizo world is the sense of progress you can feel as you're playing. It's tangible. Like I could feel myself just like it went from me thinking about things like re-grabs to where you just develop the muscle memory. And
such a cool feeling.
And that feels really good. And I'm never probably going to throw myself into like the absolute insane hacks. Like there are mechanics in ROM hacking that I'm not a fan of. I don't like yellow shells. I don't like Chuck Gates.
I thought it was going to be really funny if you were listening to the ones you played and you're just like, yeah, and then I played Invictus. It was pretty easy.
No, that's my next year. I didn't put them any on my list this year, but I really liked Ambivalence and I really liked Akogare Mario World. And Akogare is one that would have been insurmountably hard, two or three years ago. But after playing games like Love Yourself and then a handful of others, it felt completely doable and within my wheelhouse. It was that sense of progress is so cool.
Mm-hmm. And I like games that focus on like rapid checkpoints too, where you're only asked to do 10 to 20 seconds and just get it down. And then you hit that checkpoint and it's the best feeling in the world. Like every time you hit that H, you just feel so good.
I think Kaizo Era was what made me recognize that, like, before my brain was kind of like, okay, you need to be an arcade style game where the goal is to string together a complete run of the whole game to really get that like kind of action thrust to the story. Mm-hmm. I think the Kaizo Bend was like, no, you can have what feels like a formally substantive journey as a game just with like a series of checkpoints and making constant progress like that. You don't necessarily need to string the whole game into one run.
And most games come with quick restarts now too. So you don't have to you don't have to do the whole Mario dying animation and going back to a map. You can just instantly retry if you die.
It doesn't stop the music.
It just keeps everything going.
So slick.
Doing it the original Nintendo way would be agonizing.
Well, there are hacks that are still like that because some people have not learned how to put that in, or they're just older and those, you know, they haven't developed the tools to make that yet. But all the hacks.
Thing is that I do really want to beat Kaizo Mario World on hard because I did play a big chunk of that one years ago. I learned all the levels. There's a 99 lives code that's perfectly mm-hmm. easy to implement, but you do have to put up with the.
I guess I'll just close out my number 10 by saying that, like, if the Kaizo world isn't really where you want to go and you want a really dose of, like, really high quality Super Mario World ROM hack action, check out A Plumber for All Seasons. Mm-hmm. Just a
love that
gorgeous little game. No, like, no stress. It just feels like a solid-ass Mario-ass Mario game, and I liked that game to bits, so.
That one's definitely more
my speed.
You would
love A Plumber for All Seasons, mm-hmm. man. It's such a cute little thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like if you want something, if you want to plug yourself into like freeware games that have really strong action chops, I think plugging into like the weirdo fan game scenes is a really good way to do that mm-hmm. because you get people that have thought really hard about how to make a good Mario game or how to make a good Mega Man game. And I think you get that I've got a lot of joy, like the same thing with like Doom. I think that if you like action design but you're also interested in like weirdo freeware scenes, I think plugging into ROM hacks and fan games and stuff like the Kaizo scene is a really good way to get that.
Yeah, for sure.
Itch.
For sure. For
scratched. Sure.
So that's my number 10. I'm going to pass the baton to Rhett.
Okay. So I have realized something very, very quickly here.
Uh-oh.
Is that I'm going to have by far the most like conservative, like normal, the most mainstream bending list by far.
You gotta have one of those every now and again.
I'm not listing games made by friends.
We gotta have a normie in here to help keep
the most normie right now.
Rat. Last year, Polly picked Xenoblade 3 for number one, and you picked Xenoblade Boy 3 Stranger.
Is number one. Goddamn.
Yeah. Look, we got a bigger audience now. We got to have that. So we got to corner that Game Awards watching segment of the audience. So
you're here. You serve an important. You're an important vitamin mm-hmm. in the cocktail in the body of the SoxCast. Right?
It's just funny seeing over the years how I've feel like drifted a little bit, and then everybody else was like, "We're not playing games that cost $60 anymore." Or even more. My number 10 is Ace Attorney Investigations 2, Woo! Prosecutor's Gambit.
Yes! Hell yeah!
DS! It's a DS adventure game.
It was re-released this year on Steam.
That's fine. You're still... Red, I still...
That's what I'm saying. Was where I'm like, this so far is like the most mainstream game anybody's talking about.
Is Ace Attorney Investigations?
Really? Well, it's published by Capcom, for God's sakes. Yes. You know? I know, it's like 2011 DS game.
Tell us about this game,
right? So that's the problem, is I feel like I would just want to go, oh yeah, just go listen to the podcast, the last podcast. I think that's the one I talked about it. So this was released on Steam as a two-pack. It's the, you know, Ace Attorney Investigations 1 and 2. And I really didn't like 1 that much. It's kind of boring. And this game was just such a revelation that turned everything around. Just like, even just playing the same, just the story was so much more interesting.
Ah, gotcha.
And I think the thing is where I'm comfortable listing 2 only is that Great Ace Attorney, the 1900s one, those two games are really the same, part 1 and part 2 of the same story, where Investigations 2 is like, you really don't have to play the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a couple characters you'll be like, I don't know what their deal is. Mostly, like, the ninja girl that hangs around with Edward now. Like, her story is really explained and fully resolved in the first one, so she's just kind of hanging around in this one. It is a little weird, but all the new stuff is, you know, entirely self-contained in this game. And the story is just really good, and, like, it kind of reminds me of the third Ace Attorney game, where, like, things you don't expect come back in later cases and, you know, starts all tying together.
Mm.
This one is, like, an even more magnified version of that, where every case is connected. That's one of the things I mentioned last time.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so, like, the big finale, the big reveals at the end are just like, what the hell is going on? All of it tied together. It's just
peak
crazy.
Storytelling is happening.
That's
it's
so
just
cool.
For peak storytelling for me, where it's just big reveals, big dramatic moments. There's one character in this game who, based on the fan art, or not fan art, but like the title screen image, I thought they were going to be cool, and then they are the biggest piece of shit in the series ever. And that character made me cry at the end, because the game is like acknowledging that they suck, and then like there's this really emotional scene where they're trying to do better and like trying to fix themselves. So like having them team up with Edgeworth, not even in the climax, like there's multiple climaxes basically, but this one part where like I don't know if exactly if like he's doing like the finger point with Edgeworth at the same time. It's just very cool. And like, yeah, there's at least one real good emotional moment for me in this. It was I wouldn't say it was a solid package, because you gotta get that first game.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a sleepy game. I don't know, that one just missed for me.
I remember reviewing it positively back in the day, or at least somewhat positively.
Maybe you want to check out too, because it's way better, and it never got released in America till now.
Yeah, I'll probably do that, because it's been on my list. Like, I've only heard people say it's almost maybe the best Ace Attorney game, so...
I remember seeing a list that had, like, Ace Attorney Investigations 1 at, like, dead last.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was, like, number 2 after... Trials and Tribulations, and now I'm like, yeah. I mean, it's like, you wouldn't think there would be that big of a jump, but it really is.
Awesome.
So I think that's my number 10.
That's your number 10?
Killer.
All right, well, what do you say? We've had our fun. It's time to go back to the mines for us. We are going into the second shift at the listener list mines, and I do believe John has us covered for our next pick.
Hello there. This one is from Cynthia/Fresno. Thanks so much for sending in a list. Hiya, Soxcast. Another year come and gone, and so here we are again with a celebration of some games I played this year that meant a lot to me. For the sake of brevity...
This is funny because John gets the longest ones.
That's the secret. That's the funny part. That's the bit.
I'm just looking at the whole text file and it's starting it. For the sake of brevity...
It's starting to sink in.
I'll launch right into it. Honorable mention, Zenless Zone Zero. Because of this being a forever game, and one that is fighting a constant battle to get me to spend real money on cute girls, I am keeping a certain distance between me and it on the list. That being said, the Astra Yao and Evelyn storyline is some of the most affecting video game drama I've experienced this year, hitting so many of my favorite beats. The power of song, mutual understanding, betrayal, forgiveness, and transcendent emotional love between two pretty girls. For that, ZZZ gets a nod. Number 3, Monster Hunter Wilds. More monsters, more hunting, more wild.
All right.
At times, Wild keeps you on the rails as it focuses more on its story, but its story was quite interesting to me, an exploration of a strange and wild world, along with the life-threatening creatures you have to take down in it. There's a surprising level of poignancy involved with the nature of the flagship monster Arkveiled, and it was affecting to me. The actual monster hunting is as spectacular as always and led to some intense fights. The crossover battle with Omega from FF14 is the hardest thing I've ever faced in one of these games. Good hunts, good experiences, fun experiences with friends, and just a cool game all around. Number 2, the Lily Trilogy. Lily's Day Off, Lily's Night Out, and Three Wishes. I did not know what to expect when I streamed these three short VNs from developer Cupin, but what I got was the visual novel equivalent of the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster from The Hitchhiker Guide. Every gonzo VN trope and route choice you can think of. Slammed into you at full force and knocking you right on your ass. Yandere endings with Mr. Chainsaw are normal compared to some of the wild shit that takes place over these games, but it's all presented with such saccharine cute charm that you can't help but be enamored. Some of the most fun I've ever had with a video game this year came just from reacting to this madness live on stream with a smile on my face, and Cupin deserves the silver medal and many head pats for these wild little games. Number 1, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
What?
Start the count.
I love our podcast.
Start the count. This is on every list.
Why every award show should be like this? Everyone sends in whatever random shit they got into this year. This is the best. Sorry, Lily Trilogy into Super Street Fighter 2 made me just lose
That's
it.
That's real good.
Yes, it's a sterling example of a 90s arcade fighting game, perhaps the pinnacle of it. But to get to my number one, you have to be more than just a good game. This is on the list entirely due to my participation in Dot Level's Beginner's League Tournament, where I got to fight a host of other people new to facing each other in fighting games. It was an absolute standout experience over the month of September, and not only was it great to see how everyone else fared and improved, but I could feel myself improving as well. The Chun-Li mirror match I had in week two, with its back and forth and hype moments, is a memory I will cherish forever, and part of the greatest video game experience of my 2025. So much more could be said, but I'll leave it at goddamn what fun I had with those folks. That rules. That's so nice.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, Fresno pulled off like a one frame counter in a match, and literally the hosts were just like, what the fuck? You're doing this online.
Dot the 37.
Mm-hmm.
I love how much the various streaming stuff has been good for been fun for the community. So many streamers, so many folks having fun streaming. And I've also enjoyed Frez's journey with fighting games. Like, they sent me like a series of like 1cc's over the years that have been really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. We'll hope you send. Thanks always for your lists and your listening. Next.
All right. I've got a list coming from Alper002, also known as Alperu2, in one of two places. You probably never heard of me, but you might have seen my unceremonious bump to the Discord's user list. Somehow I stumbled into here and decided to listen to the previously latest podcast, and because of all the talk about disappointment of people coming around and saying, well, I would have, but I now present you what happens when you accidentally encourage someone on the fringes. A list of video games. The most terrifying thing. First off, again, like you're going to love this, Final Fight. Inspired by an indie dev's passion about beat-em-ups, I tried to put some time into it on MAME. I may not be that good at it and can only theoretically beat Stage 2 on one coin. However, I'm having a lot of fun throwing dudes into each other and figuring out strategies with the help of save states. The enemies are really good at surprising you, which is as frustrating to lose against as it is satisfying to beat. It's fun. Watch Murphigator. You will learn how to play that game very well. Secondly,
I really want to make a beat 'em up journey sometime soon.
Beat 'em ups are good.
Bog Hog wrote one of my favorite things, because I got this for Kaizo Mario World 2, but it's a list of like 15 great, really good beat 'em ups in like ascending order of difficulty. Mm-hmm. Like, here's a good one to start with. Here's one after that. Here's one after that. I'm like, yes.
This is where the journey starts. Shmups. Another era comes. Another era approacheth.
Era.
Secondly, Professor Layton and the Curious Village. Also a game I've yet to complete, but I've been having a great time playing it together with a friend. We've been having lots of fun going, oh, it's this fucking guy again, or talking up just how much everyone in the titular village seems obsessed with puzzles. Friends make everything better, but the puzzles are pretty fun on their own, too. Just watch out for the riddles. And last,
I wonder if they finished that game yet.
Yeah, that game's got some real devious stuff, but it's also got a wild ending.
Those first three Layton games go nuts at the end.
Yeah, I love every single, like, those first three games are fantastic.
Yeah,
and last but not
least, a lot of DS adventure games.
Weird
representation.
And last but not least, well, it's the smallest, but Commit Arson Now. This year, on a forum I don't have an account on but lurk nonetheless, someone posted a link to a certain blog post about making good small games. Within were links to a variety of little examples, but Commit Arson Now, if nothing else, caught my eye first. Then the singing caught my ears. I still smile when thinking about it. It reignited, or should I say, committed arson, to an interest in small games within me that I've been missing. I've been a bit more curious since I played, both because of the game itself, I'm playing and enjoying many Sylvie games for the first time, but also the blog I found it through. Thanks for existing. I have trouble saying things, but I can at least express gratitude in this one silly way. For now, it's something I want to work on. Have good! Got to take a moment here to also
so much for that list.
Take a second here. I'm going to grab this needle. I'm going to pop John's little ego balloon so we don't get too out of hand here.
I was already getting ready to freak out before they mentioned my blog post because I really, really like Commit Arsenal.
Yeah. I know.
That's one of my favorite Sylvie games.
I've heard you talk about that one, yeah.
I was like, does John know this one? And then, he listed it.
Yeah. All right, Red, I think you've got a listener list.
This comes from Azalea.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, Yakuza 0. I swear, I just sorted these by size, and then I get a list that's like completely my jam.
Yeah!
Number 3, Yakuza 0. It was wonderful this year to start playing a series that embodies everything I love. It's fun, compassionate, and lean for its scope. To me, it's an even bigger comfort hug of a series than Dragon Quest, and in many ways is similar. I love that this is on here. This is the spread. Number 2, Chrono Trigger.
What? Yeah! All right!
I don't think I've ever played a game that challenged me to my roots like CT did. It's taught me more about what I value than anything. It's taught me more about what I value than anything I've unwaveringly loved, and I think I'm going to keep learning things from it as I played in Japanese.
Nice.
Yeah. So the story there is that Azalea wrote a big blog post after having like kind of a mixed response to Chrono Trigger, and we yapped about it a bunch, and it partly another friend I have is playing it, and then Azalea posted that, and so that got me to replay Chrono Trigger that we talked about before. It was a really fun back and forth, and I had a really good time. I'm glad it made such a positive, like such a full impact.
So Chrono Trigger is number 2,
right?
What's one game better?
God. What? Jeez, this list is bangers, man.
Number 1, Excise.
Wait, yeah, there you go.
Playing a small part in helping give birth to this game is my greatest joy of the year, as well as the amazing friend I made who created it. Both the game itself and the story of its creation are everything I love about video games, and I want to go into 2026 holding that close in my heart. Thanks for doing this every year. It's a beautiful tradition that warms my heart and brings us all together.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, we, like, y'all, I think this might be our best show ever. This is going to be our best show ever. I can feel it. It's in my bones already.
Good energy here.
There's such good energy around here. So, guess we're ready to move on to our next audio list. And this one comes from somebody who's recently been mentioned. This comes from Sylvie.
Perfect.
So let's check out what Sylvie has to say in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hello, gamers. This is the year I finally got into Battle Gorega. This vertical scrolling shmup is legendary for its complex rank system, which dynamically adjusts the difficulty as you play, and its incredibly tense climax that pits you against 2 fucked up RNG-heavy bosses in a row. This game feels like riding a knife's edge. The rank system lowering the difficulty when you die makes it feel like it's never over until you lose your last life, but the way the game doles out resources and the lack of bomb invincibility means you never feel safe until the final boss goes down. This game overtook every other shmup I've ever played to become my new favorite. I have to give an honorable mention to Armed Police Batrider, which shares a lot of Gorega's best qualities, and is honestly a little more in line with my aesthetics, but Gorega's endgame goes so hard that I think I like it a little better.
Hell yeah.
However, my favorite game I played this year has to be the freeware RPG Demon King Chronicle. This game immediately drew me in with its mysterious, dangerous world and creative, rat-stacking, salad-equipping battle system. It's exciting to fight your way deeper into the world, expand your frontier of knowledge, and discover secrets and shortcuts. But even though the design is excellent, I love this game more so for its strong personality. Beyond just being a bundle of interesting mechanics, it's compelling to play because I get such a sense of idiosyncrasy and inventiveness from it. I feel it in everything from major decisions that govern core systems to the little details of how the screen colors fade when you get in an encounter. Demon King Chronicle is what I want out of video games. I don't just want to interact with interesting systems. I want to feel the creator's voice behind the work.
This one's been on my radar.
Now, normally my game of the year would be my favorite new game I played during the year, which was Demon King Chronicle. But that's not how things worked out this time, because this year, I played Unlimited Saga. This game is fucking bonkers, and it took me around 20 hours over 4 days to beat the final boss. It ruined my entire long weekend, and caused me great physical and mental distress. However, I forgive Akitoshi Kawazu for inflicting this harm on me, because he's the best game designer to ever do it. Like every Kawazu game, Unlimited Saga is a visionary masterpiece that not only towers above its contemporaries, but stretches beyond the sky to eclipse modern works with its uniqueness, experimentation, and personality. It's definitely the most game that I played this year. Ravenblade.
Name another motherfucking end of the year list that is going to include Unlimited Saga.
Fuck yes.
We are, oh so my god. The energy is absolutely astounding. And our second shift in the listener list minds is over. And it's time for John to drop a big hot number 9.
I'm dying, Paulie. I've got such a big grin on my face.
I don't know how you couldn't. I don't know how you couldn't at this point, because this is just honestly astounding.
okay. My number 9 was Milas 3's Death of a Wish. This is the sequel to Luca Born of a Dream. I had a ball with this one. The first Luca was the game that like unlocked parry combat for me. That's right. This is Parry Slop.
Let's go.
It was before parries were mainstream in everything.
I think Luca was 2017. This is the cutting edge of parries. Death of a Wish makes like a number of really smart gameplay decisions. In Luca, successfully doing a parry instantly breaks an enemy, which lets you do a bunch of damage. Which led to me playing kind of defensively, where I like wait for the parry window and then attack and then wail on them. In Death of a Wish, you play as Chris, who is a weaker, angrier character within the narrative. So parries in Death of a Wish don't instantly break the enemy. They just decrease the gauge like a big amount. And you also want to be hitting them with attacks. And then if you're not being proactive, then you can't break them. So you wind up playing, you feel weaker, but you also feel like scrappier and more dangerous. You got to play more aggressively. And it wound up feeling really good. I feel like it's probably in tune with like, I don't think it's probably that much harder than Luca as like Silksong is to Hollow Knight. But I feel like the comparison there where it's like, okay, we are forcing you to play more aggressively with some key mechanical changes that I think are just really smart, and it feels really good in Death of a Wish. I think the story is also just a little bit more more precise than Luca's. Luca's felt a little bit, it had that a bit of that debut game charm where it's like we're stuffing in all the stuff we really care about and these stories we want to tell, to the point of feeling a little overstuffed at times. Death of a Wish just feels kind of like very pointed and on it. There's a big act break in the middle, and if it had ended there, it would have been like here's the really tight action game sequel to Luca, and then there's a second act that does a bunch with the like VN stuff and kind of story driven combat sequences that I think makes it like a full follow up to Luca in a way that I was really pleased with. It's just a very strong sequel. Like I think it. Making a big action game, a big paid action game that is like 10 plus hours long and tells like a personal big large scope story across multiple games even is like the thing that so many devs set out to do and fail at. And then I think Colin and Co. just completely nailed it across Luca and Death of a Wish. I think these are really lovely games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you've talked these games up for years, and Luca has been in my library for way too long with me having not played it. And it's just, man, I got to get to that at some point because I feel like these are absolutely my jam. So, yeah.
It's the thing that unlocked parries for me. It's the thing that unlocked rank systems for me. Going for S ranks felt really, really good. Mm. And in both games, I went for the biggest honking sword I could get so that I would break enemies and then just like really big slow Zweihander wind up and then boom.
Yeah, that's the red methodology of approaching an action game.
Feels so fucking good. Fucking love Death of a Wish.
Nice.
All right, I was a little sad about having to bump Egg and Cave Noir.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm glad talking through these. I feel like, okay, no, I'm glad
these are probably made the right decision here. Yeah. The appropriate amount of excitement
Egg and Cave Noir are very good. Terry Kavanagh's Egg and Cave Noir are very good. All right, keep going.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
I think you got a number 9.
Okay. Yeah. He just said keep going, and I thought he meant that I had something else to say about it. But no, I have a number 9, so you shut up about your number 9. It's my turn now. So my number 9, to me anyway, it served as a reminder to creatives that sometimes you should just embrace and nurture your unhinged creativity, even if that art may be off-putting or offensive to others. My number 9 is Sweetest Monster plus Sweetest Monster Refrain.
Yes!
So Sweetest Monster is a VN by Ebi Hime, who is a fairly prolific English visual novel creator, and she primarily dabbles in the world of Yuri visual novels, but Sweetest Monster is not one of those. this is a story about a man who is stuck in the middle of a miserable midlife crisis, who's in a marriage that has lost all of its luster. He and his wife are just constantly sniping back and forth at each other. He's got a daughter that literally never leaves her room because she's just too depressed. But the story actually begins years prior to this, back when he was a child, and while on a miserable vacation to a family member's home, he ends up nearly drowning because he dove into a pool to try and save a cat that had fallen in. And despite the fact that he himself, he could not swim, because he's a gigantic idiot. But you gotta save the cat. Gotta save the cat. The internet will hate you forever. And then back to the present, while he's out on a walk one night after having another spat with his wife, he meets a charming black-haired girl who has cat ears. And he finds himself just immediately taken in by her various charms. And she insists...
She's cute.
She's very cute. Just very good cat girl design on this part. Grade A cat girl. Not going to complain here. And this cat girl insists that she is the cat from his childhood and that she's also a demon that ended up being so touched by his selfless act that she'd fallen in love with him and that she's here to repay that favor by basically stealing him away from his miserable life and drowning him in her affection. And that's a great little setup. So let me just make it clear. Sweetest Monster is not for the faint of heart. And it's not a game that's just, oh, there's just out and out sex and boobies everywhere. It's nothing like that. It's a story where you will start to have an inkling about something a little disturbing about 3/4 through the first game, or the ending will just smack you in the face like a sledgehammer. And I don't want to spoil it. I'll just say that the reveal isn't hard to find. You can find it being talked about on the Steam forum. So, you know, there's all your content warnings. But I got blindsided by it. I felt a certain way. But...
A negative way.
There was a confidence. I was very fascinated by the author because she actually does a big commentary after you finish the game that kind of explains her own nervousness in putting this story out there and just like, I want to tell something really fucked up. I want to do something that's just not what I normally do. And I really like what I've done. So it's just like, that's stuck in my craw. And it was just like, you know, she's out here just being very brave, I think. And I think we encourage that in game design space or you know, game dev spaces. So I went in and I checked out Sweetest Monster Refrain. The second game is the fallout of the reveal from the first game. And the problems that is created only becoming bigger, and the source of those problems becoming even more persistent. The main character goes from being an anxious about, you know, maybe I'm cheating on my wife, to something much bigger and a little more taboo. And he spends the entire runtime of this game in the most miserable headspace. Refrain is not a pleasant read. It's sort of the same way, though, that I liked Steins Gate Zero's portrayal of Rentaro's brain literally coming apart at the seams after that game follows up from the bad ending of Steins Gate. So I loved the way that she kind of explores and creates texture with putting you in the head of someone who is so obviously fucked up and has fucked up in ways that there's no way you can take back. And both of this game's endings reflect that, and it stays honest to what it's saying and doing this whole time, and then just drops that in your lap. I think that this one was challenging for me because it's based on, I don't know, like a trope. Would we call it a trope? Because you guys know what it is. It's a trope that some people are into. It makes me uncomfortable, but it also kind of let me see it more in the light of this is just a piece of art. And there can be pieces of art that run with something like this. And while it's still very much not a thing that I like in terms of, you know, the trope, you can still tell a very good, weird, and fucked up story with it, and me come out the other end being like, holy crap, you won me over. I can't believe that happened. And again, the author had a lot of apprehension about putting this story out, because she knew that it would probably offend and alienate a lot of people, but I think her just letting go and swinging for it, you know, kind of helped me feel more comfortable consuming and creating art. And I just kind of think that's rad. I still think it's a good story. I think it's awesome, and it'll squick you the fuck out.
This is delightful. This was a really fun journey to watch.
Yeah,
you got real negative, and then you kind of slowly piece together like, oh, I see what you're doing here.
Yeah.
And I always really like watching those journeys.
Mm-hmm. It was a fun little journey to take because, I came away from that first game like, I don't know. Was it
Refrain that really kind of made it whole?
Yeah, that kind of made everything kind of feel whole. Like, without having that second piece there, you just kind of get smacked in the face with a thing. But then when you get to, like, wallow in it and just enjoy that character's misery, I guess. That's a weird way of putting it. It definitely feels like
that part was needed, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true of a lot of OELVNs, is, like, they can kind of release almost in two parts or whatnot, instead of being like one story and then the sequel. It's more like, here is the full story.
I mean, even we did it.
Yeah. And Butterfly Soup kind of had that vibe for me too. I feel like the two games together is what really tells the complete story.
Yeah. And I think that just kind of like seeing an artist like let go of their inhibitions for a bit and just do the damn thing gives it a little extra shine for me. So that's why it ended up here. It left an impression. It made me feel awful in the ways that I was supposed to feel awful. And I think that's just effective storytelling.
Yeah, I think that rules.
So that's my number 9, Sweetest Monster and Sweetest Monster Refrain. Rats! Number 9.
What's up, gamers?
What's up, gamers?
Are you ready for some fucking whiplash? These two next to each other is the best.
It's so good.
My number 9 is Cyberpunk 2077.
Yes!
Phantom Liberty.
I cannot have asked for a better follow-up.
So Cyberpunk 2077 is a fine game. It is open world. I didn't want to say slop, but...
It's the year of slop. Just let the slop fly, man.
Like, it's a good open world, number go up, gun get bigger. you do a lot of quests, you shoot stuff. It's fine. I don't know if it would have... I do think, like, I've played it after, like, they basically reworked literally everything. Combat updates and stuff. So it definitely plays really well now. It's fun getting stuff like double jump and sliding and, you know, just being a very agile, or whichever way you play, the hacking stuff is fun. Like, any game where you can hack enemies to attack each other is, like, gets a few points.
Always a jam. Always a jam.
Because it's always fun making AI fight each other. Mm-hmm. But the part that gets this on the list, and, you know, the part I really loved was the full expansion, the Phantom Liberty, where it's just a much tighter game. The story's way better. The area isn't as big. It's just dramatically more focused, and it's shorter. Mm-hmm. And I think you can just load it up and just start a character at that point, mm-hmm. which I actually, thinking about it just now, I was like, I could definitely play this again. Because, again, it made me think about a first-person shooter in a way that I haven't since Half-Life 2, basically, mm. which a game mm. I really love. Mm. There's two choices in the game, like, are you going to ally with this character or you're going to betray them? And then another ally betray thing kind of at the end. And they're just fucking gutting. Like, I really agonized over the second one, especially the first one. I'm like, I'm not betraying you. And the second one was like, well, hold on. The consequences of the first one, though, like, basically, the story parts of it really remind me of the cyberpunk anime, where it's like, you and another character just being like, okay, let's get out of here. Let's go to the moon. Mm-hmm. And like the struggle to actually do that and the insane, insane over the top gunfight at the end. And then again, kind of pulling a Half-Life 2 and giving your character like a god mode cheat ability in the 11th hour.
Yeah.
Which is always fun. But then losing that power and then being helpless for a second and then having to make a really bad choice. So, like, I did take the path that went to, like, an actual character ending, like, end credits, you know, the game is over now, like, without even beating the main game. And then when I, you know, went back, chose the other thing and got a ending in the main game, I was like, yeah, this didn't feel like my ending. It kind of felt like alternate weird path where it's like, like, Phantom Liberty kind of was the story and the game for me. And it was fun kind of just having basically a max level character and like getting to use them more than just doing the end game of the original thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, let's set up a scenario where you have to use every tool that you have available because there's like 100 enemies coming at you.
Fuck yeah. Sometimes you just want that formal conclusion where you get to use all your toys all at once.
Yeah. So, yeah, good action, good story. Like, I had a really good time with this one.
Killer. Do you think that I could just play this and kind of get the gist, or do you think that I would want to play the entirety of Cyberpunk 2077? Because I love that anime, and it did spark my interest in the game.
It's tricky. It's really tricky, because the way it's set up is that, like, they raised the level cap when the expansion came out, and, like, they give you a phone call when you hit, like, level 40. But, like, I think you'd want to probably just finish the main game first and then play the expansion.
Okay.
Because getting derailed from the main story for, like, 20 other hours, I had no idea what I was jumping back into afterwards. So just, like, the momentum was really bumpy there.
Gotcha. Okay.
And baseline Cyberpunk isn't that long for the critical path. Like,
looking at
how long to beat, it's, like, 25 hours. I'm sure you do more doing a lot of that.
That's another thing where it's just like, it's as long as you want it to be because there's way too much.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, there's 10 people are fighting over here. Go stop them. Like, right. There's way too much open world nonsense. Mm. It's one of those things like Witcher where it's like, if you just ignore like these two types of incidents and just focus on like side quests and main story, it's way better of a game.
Awesome. But
I don't know. Yeah, jumping straight into Phantom Liberty might be a little weird.
Might not be the right call. Okay.
Yeah.
Because, like, again, I have interest in the base game. I just wasn't sure. It's like, well, would this just give me everything that I wanted? But if it's going to kind of be weird and maybe not feel entirely right, then it's probably...
It might be a little bumpy.
Yeah, it'd probably feel better for me to just do the original game first.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I'm glad this one got a good turnaround, huh?
Yeah, Cyberpunk is absolutely that game. Like, it's so silly.
Just release a game and fix it, like, 3 years later.
And everybody will love it and forget the fact that it launched and it was kind of crap. Yeah, that's...
Final Fantasy XIV.
Like, literally the most popular game in our community, so...
No Man's Sky.
Yep. Whew. Man, we are just rewarding bad behavior these days, but that's why we have Rhett here to be the voice of that, to speak to that crowd. He can help them, helps them smooth it over a little bit.
Yeah.
All right.
You know what's next, though? We got to go back to the mines.
We got to go back to the mines. We're right back in. So, John, hit us up with the beginning of our next excursion into the mines.
I told you. Go ahead and give me the long ones. I'm fine. I've got my Trubic youthful 32-year-old energy to balance off your old bones over here that can't read long lists, but you
really yes, yeah.
read the long list.
Fragile voice box. Just can't do it anymore.
This one is from someone from Iran,
hey.
Which, you know, fuck yeah. Global listener base.
Mm-hmm.
Of the devil. At the recommendation of one very sexy individual, Polly, I gave this a try. It blew me away on all fronts. Its presentation takes all the things I like about Danganronpas whilst amplifying them. Its dystopian anti-capitalism themes are portrayed with such starkness, and the game never stops making fun of the cops. Hell yeah. The detectiving processes and trials made me feel pretty dang smart, regardless of how my actual skill level may be at the game. That's all well and great, but the story of episode one with Morgan putting her facade away to empathize with Sarah over their shared upbringing of learning how to interact with the world through the media they consumed is something that resonated with me perfectly. Definitely my personal 2025 game of the year. Metaphor Refantasio. Yeah, it's good. I played the first third of it in 2024, practically on release date, took a hiatus, and finished in 2025. Its visual presentation was actually not something many people liked, and the music certainly took some effort to grow on me, but I've always adored the former and come around to the latter. Press turn was nice, but the archetype system was the real cream of the combat's crop. It was so fun to use the ridiculously broken tools the game gave you to make some crazy builds. My late game grind where I maxed out the character's ultimate classes was especially memorable, possibly more so than in any other game I remember. Its cast isn't just unequivocally amazing, it's also the best utilized cast out of all the Persona games that I've played, so 3P, 4G, and 5R, that's all the Persona games.
That's all of them, yeah.
Yeah, you played the trilogy. Contrasted with an absolute magnificent bastard DM of a villain. The game's politics with its philosophy of change through action manifesting from harnessing one's anxieties never feels unrealistic while still retaining a blindingly inspiring optimism. So far, I think it's reasonable to say that this is Atlas's magnum opus. This is a John editorialization. The fairy is really
She's
cute.
So good. We love Gallica. Gallica's well, cute.
The fairy's really cute. I really like the fairy.
Mm-hmm.
Her little sword and helmet.
It's so adorable. Sword. She doesn't even bite. She just got her little sword. Flies around. It's cute.
Oh my god.
She's so precious. Oh. She's so precious. And she cares so much for the main character. And it's not even like she's a hopelessly in love kind of thing. It's just, she just really wants to be there for him. It's so
I'm approximately 100 times more interested in this one than Persona 5.
yeah. Absolutely, you should be.
Hollow Knight Silksong. I'm sorry, but I just could not live with myself if I were to give this anything less than my most glowing praise. Mm. This will probably be on so many other people's lists who have accomplished so much more than me in this game, whether Steel Soul, any percent speedruns, getting all the achievements, or having completed multiple playthroughs in the span of the first month of it coming out, and I do not care. I will glaze. I will dick ride. I will swallow. I will bounce on that thing with a 45-degree angle. I will silk on my shit, and if I die to a gank fight on the 13th wave to some clown doing two masks per hit, I will make the run back, because the game is just that goddamn good. I'm a simple guy. This is basically just Hollow Knight 2, and I like that.
Get that on the fucking Steam page, man. Get that whole review. That whole writing it and doing tricks on it. Just get that whole like Team Cherry. We got you. We'll let you have this one for free. Just get that on the Steam page.
For Silksong mention.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, Silent Hill F with only one, I think, so far as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what's... I genuinely don't know.
Yeah.
Silksong, Silent Hill F, Claire Obscure 33 at one vote apiece, and Excise at two.
Wow. Beautiful. It's anybody's game.
What a show.
It's anybody's game.
I have another listener list.
Fuck yeah.
This one comes from Rain. These are not listed in any specific order. They got no numbers, so I'm just going to read it as it goes. Mm-hmm. Hades. I've never enjoyed real-time action-based gameplay before, but I liked the gameplay more than I thought. The roguelike format really teaches you that failure by dying is not something to get demotivated by, which is something I used to struggle with in games. It is a very well-told story, too, with its usage of flashback cutscenes and progression-locked dialogue. It's a fun setting, even if you don't understand Greek mythology, but it's even cooler if you are obsessed with it, like me. Also, the character designs are so amazing, and they have inspired my own art to such a great degree. Great choice there.
Hell yeah.
Deltarune Chapters 3 and 4. An incredibly funny game. It has the exact sense of humor I have. I wish I could be as funny as these goobers. It's all very charming. The music is, as always, just excellent too. I love the character so much, Susie in particular. Has such a visible growth throughout all of the chapters, and I adore her dynamics with practically the entire rest of the cast. I will die for them all. Also, the former Undertale characters are very fun, too. Here comes another one. Persona 5 Royal. The stylized art direction is so good, it almost makes you forget how ass the 3D models look. The soundtrack was so wonderful, you could really feel how it brings out the acid and the acid jazz. The villains were all complete fucktards. There's a word I've not used in a long time. But they were very... That is a word that I used so much in the early years of the site. But they're very well written, except Kaneshiro. Fuck his butt. Yeah, the Kaneshiro one is where they really dropped the ball on that one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of a lot of women from Venus, men from Mars jokes that the game likes to make, and I just do not like some of the characters at all. Makoto, Miss Captain Obvious, Miss Captain Obvious, and the cringy horn dog cat come to mind. But god damn it, aside from these, this game has such good character writing, it makes you forget how predictable the plot is. The game is still incredible, though. Joker is my source of gender envy. Yusuke and Akechi taught me that men can be pretty and well-written, and I will die for An and Yoshizawa. I just wish the game allowed you to date your male high schooler friends instead of alcoholic adults and your teacher. They would rather you commit literal sex crimes than let you be gay. Thanks, Atlas.
Teaching us all that. Always the problematic fave.
All right. So, Rhett, do you have a listener list?
I do. This comes in from Tengu Gemini, and get ready, John. We got some more first mentions.
Oh, baby.
Let's go.
Number 3, Donkey Kong Bonanza. Ooh. Maybe the best 3D platformer Nintendo has ever developed. DK feels like the Incredible Hulk. He is nigh unstoppable, and it feels good to wreck everything. Also, really good movement options that feel good to use. Number 2, Kirby Air Riders. I have been waiting over 20 years for the ability to play City Trial online with people, and that wait was well rewarded. This is less a racing game and more like a racing-themed activity center, chaotic in all the best ways. This game,
I played a big chunk of Kirby Air Ride, the original, this year. And had a fucking ball with it, and then they released this.
This one seems like 15 out of 10 on the chaos level at times. Like just going berserk. And number 1, Digimon Story Time Stranger. So that's at 2 votes now.
Stuff. There you go.
My Digimon tied with XI as an ahead of...
ahead of Silk Song and Expedition 33. What is happening? Yeah.
I have never played a Digimon RPG before, but I saw this game getting a ton of praise and had to try out the demo. I was immediately sold. This is just a real fun JRPG. Digimon and Kirby flop spots for me occasionally, but this is my current order as of the writing.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Tengu.
Speaking of chaos, this list is just utter chaos this year. How about that? Mm. And up next, we have another audio list from, of course, our good pal Carmichael McCallis. So let's give that a spin in 3, 2, 1, go.
Fuck 2025 and the horse it rode in on. Carmichael McCallis here, and I barely played anything. Number 3 goes to a game that dropped out of nowhere from a creator that's previous title was an absolute banger. That's right, Awaria. I'm going to be entirely honest and say I don't remember too much of the gameplay as it's been over 11 months. Looking at my Steam achievements, I beat it in a little over 2 hours, and those 2 hours were over 7 hour span, so yeah. What I do remember is that there's a lot of girls kissing girls, and the last boss was a little bullshit. But like Helltaker, it's free, and I enjoyed it enough to finish it. Number two is Whisper of the House. It's a pixel art isometric room builder, and it's very chill. The storyline is light with a few spooky, weird things going on in the background. Nothing really dark, but just a few signs that perhaps at one point it might have been. If you like cleaning and designing rooms, you'll probably enjoy this. This was another game that, after beating it, I continued to play for another week or two just to check out and complete everything. I can certainly see myself coming back to this one. Number one is Final Fantasy XIV for finally giving me a fucking house. Hell yeah. Maybe one day I'll have the spoons to glitch everything into place, but for now all I have are forks. As always, special mention to Satisfactory and No Man's Sky for being games I can always play for a bit, and I can walk away from it any time when life happens. Anyway, that's it. If you find it hard to live for the sake of love, then live out of spite. The ones who love you will be thankful, and the ones that never be pleased will be upset.
Could not have said it better myself. So, John, how about you get us back out of the mines for a bit with your number 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8.
You done? Okay. eight, Tree and Odyssey.
Yeah!
Oh!
I'm here for it!
I played Etrian Odyssey 4, I played the first, like, two worlds, like, years ago, and I played in college, and I played the first half of Shin Megami Tensei's Strange Journey in high school before accidentally deleting my save, because I was playing on an unreliable flash cart. And I've tried a lot with dungeon crawlers over the years, and it's hard. I've successfully made it through a handful of them. But Etrian Odyssey was always like, I need to play one of those. They're so fucking aesthetic. They're so fucking pretty. The FOEs are so cool. The Yuzo Koshiro FM synth music is so cool.
Yes.
And I bought a cartridge of Etrian Odyssey 1 like 5 years ago. And then, finally, after playing Pokemon Odyssey, a ROM hack themed after Etrian Odyssey.
Of course.
Just arbitrarily, I was like, let's play this. And I was like, okay, now I'm ready for the real deal. And let me tell you, the real deal fucking rips.
Yes, it does.
Etrian Odyssey is so fucking good. The twists and the mechanical twists in this game, the whole fourth stratum especially is just fucking insane.
Yes.
It goes so hard. I feel like the first stratum is also just like, it is laying the groundwork. Like, this is what you're in for. Get fucking ready.
Suck it up. You are probably going to eat so much shit on the first floor in the first stratum. You just got to get used to this happening. The game's very much putting itself up front, saying, look, this ain't going to be easy.
But even then, ultimately, it was like such a nice comfort food game. Like, I just played this once I got back into the thrust of it, I just like mainlined it over like a week. And it just went down so smooth, just mapping things out, playing safe, leveling up, fighting the hard bosses, getting my ass kicked by the hard bosses, leveling up some more, fighting the hard boss, just that really good kind of Mega 10 energy of you've run into the Minotaur and it's kicking your ass and you gotta get back and prep some more and think through your strategy, get some new items. I feel like there almost isn't much to say. Like, the big thing here are the FOEs, and they just use them beautifully.
Yeah. Like, the way they play with the, like, navigation puzzles with them and the way you've kind of got to learn to build your party and how you've got to learn to fight them effectively. And I think that, like, one of the best feelings of playing a dungeon crawler is when you start feeling your team synergize. When you start feeling
you
like,
get those feelings and
I got this.
So good.
You go from, oh God, I get one skill point per level up. What if I fuck up? What if I put it in something that's bad? But these games are typically designed well enough that unless you're really trying hard or you're just not catching any of the hints that the game's trying to give you. It's really hard to make a total dog shit party incapable of finishing the game. It may be harder, but I think that the Etrian games, and I think most dungeon crawlers that I've played, honestly, it's just, I don't read guides on, oh, here's the best build and these are the best teams. It's just like, I just throw teams together and they feel real rough at first. But then around mid game, you start feeling your team's abilities, start to kind of play with one another and work together really well. And that is one of the best feelings. Along with just, you know, finally getting past a difficult boss. Those are the best feelings in dungeon crawlers.
Yep. 100% agreed. And you know what? It just feels good to fill in a graph paper maze.
It really does.
It's the gentleman's symphony of the night. It's the gentleman's filling in the blue square maze in an Igavania, where it's like, that's right. I have to map it out myself. It's like, this is the feeling I grew. I loved that kind of brain dead fill in the maze type game as a kid. This is the game that I grew into. It is like, I feel like there's a lot of chunky game design to dungeon crawlers, and I also really like the comfort food aspect of them.
It's the eating the bag of Doritos of RPGs.
Yeah. And this is also a kind of game where they can be really big and long. Like, an Etrian Odyssey can be 40, 50 hours. And because it's like so spare, I really like how spare the storytelling in Etrian Odyssey feels.
They
where it steps back.
They let you just play the game. The story's there. There are cool little beats. But for the most part, Etrian keeps that to the background. And it only pokes out when it needs to.
Mm-hmm. It finally got me to go back. I played Questron and Apple II and mapped out dungeons. It felt really good.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to play some retro CRPGs like that for ages. And I feel like Etrian unlocked that for me. So I love this. I think it's just straightforwardly great. I feel like it's a great onboarding for this kind of game. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I played the DS version for hardcore gamer big dick points.
Big dick points there, for sure.
No notes. Great series. Can't wait to play Labyrinth of Toho.
Yeah, boy.
Holly.
All right.
What's your number eight?
So my number eight. It makes me feel like there's an entire genre of game that I was just kind of blind to for a number of years while it was kind of like pretty popular in like streaming circles or just like among friends. And that is the first person indie horror game.
That's a whole scene.
That's been it's been such a blind spot. I literally think the only one I ever played of these prior to this was Slender Man back in the day. Like, that's literally how far back, like, that's where my cutoff is for this genre. And so my number eight is one of these games. My number eight is Miiside. So
this is the game that you mentioned or whatnot. I'm like, oh, I've never heard of this, and I looked it up on Steam, and it was like 20,000 reviews.
Yeah, it was huge.
This came out like at the end of last year. It came out like literally on Christmas, I think.
I think it was like it was early December, but yeah,
and it just blew the fuck up. But the thing is, I know a lot of people that play these kinds of games, and most of them are just kind of like, it's okay, or they just didn't like it. And for me, it's just like, I think, well, here you go. Maybe there's something to be said about putting a cute anime girl in a video game. Maybe that is the key to making something instantly appealing. I think I'll refer to that as the law of Rhett or something like that. So Miiside is one of those games. It's a game where Mita, she is a cute little anime protagonist of this little simulation anime girl raising simulator game. And she pulls you, the creator of this game, into the world with her, and she wants you to stay with her forever. And that's really just kind of the basic gist of it. You end up being stuck in the house with her, having to perform menial tasks like chopping vegetables. And like, a cute little thing they do here is like, they make you play the little simulator first, the little two, you know, so you're playing it in first person. And so you're pressing buttons to like, all right, press this button to chop the carrots. And then you press the button and you, and she chops the carrots. But when you're in the world with her, she's like, hey, could you go get the carrots ready? I you know, and you go and you have to chop the carrots with your mouse. You have to make little slicing motions to chop the carrots. cute little things like that. But you go around the house solving light puzzles, and at some point the game, you know, tips its hand in this little open space, and it becomes more and more twisted, and a lot more threatening.
Excellent.
I think this game's biggest strengths are, firstly, it's just the sheer variety and how they're able to continue twisting this little space into like a dozen different types of areas, all with their own aesthetics and theming and lots of little one-off set pieces and gags that you can do or little things that are done to just fuck with you. And then there's the various versions of Mita that you meet throughout each one. Like every Mita has her own personality and they're all really fun, and they range from like cute and domestic, and you've got the cute, spunky, sporty one, and then there's some that are just downright fucking terrifying.
I like the sleepy one.
The sleepy one's nice. You just kind of have to drag her along to get her to, to kind of do anything when you get the sleepy Mita. It's really cute. And this game just kind of made me feel like I was on a roller coaster ride of just like ups and downs and tension as the game kind of devolves further and further into Mita's own insanity. I think that there's also a lot of really cool world building that you can find if you explore every area. You collect these little cartridges and they have information, that is based on other players who have played the game and how their interactions with Mita shaped and created the backstories of all of these different Mitas and why the proto Mita is so fucking pissed. And there's just so many little cool things like that. To me, this just felt like a complete little narrative package, just full of a bunch of over the top production, and the pacing is basically perfect. It's like a 2.5 hour game or something. I understand that people are probably fatigued with or just have no interest in the genre. They'll probably find it ho-hum, but I just like this game start to finish. It hit me really good. I liked digging into all of the backstory and finding out, and I was touched by it. I thought it was cute. You know, it's kind of like that Doki Doki Literature Club reveal, but taken to a very cool and super highly produced extreme. Just there's so much fun things to interact with and look at, and again, the interactions with the various Mitas are all just really fun. And I just got to give it props for doing so much one-off stuff that's just like a single throwaway thing, but that was like, that probably took like 2 or 3 days to make it right, you know.
I glanced at some streams of this, and every time it was like something different was happening. I'm just like, oh, guess we're playing Doom now.
Yep. It's there's so much. It's such a cute little game. Like, you know, like you could compare it to something like Jazz Punk, maybe, where Jazz Punk is in a similar thing, but that's a comedy game, where it's just like, it's just throwing all of these one-off things at you so constantly, and then you know, tying it into this very cool dark narrative, and got a great ending. I love how it ends. I think it's fantastic.
I really need to check, give this one a second chance.
Yeah. Meeside is awesome. I think this is just a fun little roller coaster ride that just, like John said, it just hit me real good, made me happy I played it. So that is my number eight. Cool. Rhett!
Are you going to do it again?
No, I'm going to let you do it.
I thought you were going to say, what's my number?
I thought about it, but I was just like, nah, it's probably going to get real annoying if I keep doing that.
Well, here's
what's
my number.
Your number? 8888888888.
Okay, how do you guys feel about JRPGs?
I can give or take sometimes.
We're generally okay.
There's a few good ones, I think.
Now, we're all in our disagreement about what the J in JRPG stands for.
Jack off, right?
Maybe it doesn't stand for anything at all.
No.
But a lot of them are made in Japan. What about a JRPG that's not from Japan and has its own spin on the genre.
How's that work?
Doesn't sound right.
How does that work?
I think that would be pretty popular.
It might.
My number eight is Witch Spring R.
Woo! Yes!
I'm like, John, it has to be on here for John. This one was so good. This one's so cute.
Oh, I need to play this one. I really, really like Witch Spring 3.
Yeah, this is like the sequel to Witch Spring 3, like gameplay-wise, probably.
I think I put that on my list in like 2018 or 2017. Oh, that's so wild.
Wow, that's so long ago. Holy shit.
Yeah, this is just a super cute little journey. You play as, you know, a single witch, Pieberry, and then her journey to find her mother, and then dealing with taking down the Pope.
Yeah!
Like, as good, all good JRPGs
as
are.
Oh, yeah, if your RPG is not about... If your RPG does not have at least a sequence where you are taking down the church, what have you done? What is your problem?
Yeah. There's a few points in this game where it made me bawl. The combat is really good as well. It's like kind of a math puzzle at times where, because you are a single character, like you've really got to figure out like, okay, when am I going to use this thing that's up every three turns? When am I going to like block?
Mike Helens.
Like, you actually have to defend a lot.
Mike Helens' Mysterious Castle.
Yeah. It's not quite as like
mathy
in depth or as sharp as that, but I'd say it's in that ballpark for sure.
That's really nice because the fighting in 3 was pretty, like, lax, I guess. Mm,
I will say I played this one on the highest difficulty, apparently.
Okay, that probably
helps. Extremely easy on normal.
That tracks, okay.
Yeah. It's also, like, some of the stuff, it doesn't explain itself. It's like, oh, you can summon more than one summon. Oh, that makes things a lot easier, huh? But I figured that out pretty early. There was just one fight where it's like, oh, it's just me against one enemy, and they're kicking my ass. Then I realize, oh, you could have had a summon that whole time. Anyways, yeah, story's really good. There's a free, you know, epilogue expansion that kind of ties everything together. It was a good time. I mean, I really talked about this one.
Yeah, this podcast this as game, well. This game just seems
my games,
really pleasant.
Yeah. Two of my three so far are just from the last podcast, which I thought was funny because I was like, yeah, I really brought it that time, huh? For them to end up on the list
mm-hmm,
together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would super recommend this one though.
Mm.
Good.
All right. So I guess we are diving right on back in to the listener list. Mine, we're starting to make some headway here.
Slowly but surely.
It's getting a little darker. But that just means we're getting closer to the light at the end of the tunnel. It's got to get darkest before it can become light. So, John, what you got?
I read. Sorry, I keep opening the text files.
You got to look at these beforehand. Sorry.
Oh my god, that's so funny. All right. Thank you so much, Kusakari, for a fresher face to the Sox community. It's been a joy to have you in the Discord, and thank you for sending in a listener list. Well, hello, SoxCast. Kusakari here for another round of Game of the Year submissions. To start things off, we have Trails in the Sky FC and SC, aka The Journey of Estelle Bright. I really like that it takes full advantage of the runtime of FC to flesh everything out in a prologue sort of way, making every moment in SC really have the oomph required to hit you emotionally. Estelle is a wonderful character, and watching her grow as a person was an absolute joy. I appreciate that the story largely opted to not go for an aha, gotcha moment and kept things relatively well-grounded, especially with the beach scene in SC.
Oh,
They don't try and go for over-the-top emotional outburst or trauma dump. It all stays very mature and respects the player's ability to understand where everyone is coming from. The rest of the cast has someone for everyone, although Sherazade was probably my favorite. I also like the stakes always feel real. There are a lot of events happening that happen that make you generally worry about what will happen, and a lot of things to do. It's also really nice in SC when a lot of the characters that were relatively sidelined in FC come into play and actually contribute to the overall plot, especially with a couple Sky Pirates.
Yes!
My main gripe comes from the fact that I played the remake of FC, so feeling the quality of life difference in playing the original SC is glaringly obvious. I am very much looking forward to it, largely for the voice acting. I know some of those are going to be great, and Sherazade's talk at the beginning is going to be killer. Eat your heart out, John. Yeah, no, it's fucking Trails FC and SC fucking.
It's rough. That's fucking awesome. Killer 1-2 punch. Also, no Falcom snub this year. Fantastic.
Yes.
I think this was my game of the year in like 2019 was FCNS. Yeah. I love these games.
Yeah.
I mean,
ooh, go ahead, Rhett.
I mean, this is really a vote for first and SC.
Yeah.
Because that's the version we played.
Ah, it doesn't matter.
So first was not a snub.
No.
That's true. Second mention, coming in at number two, we have Miiside, a game that I figured I would like a lot, but I didn't think it would reach this high for me. It's a game where you interact with an anime girl named Mita through a phone app before subsequently being dragged into said app with her. You then go on an adventure, visiting various versions of Mita and various versions of the app leading to shenanigans of different forms. And if you're looking to this game at all, you probably know who Cappy is, the fan favorite. Yes. Personally, I'd love to play against her in DDR. She kicked my ass, but I would at least put up a fight. I wasn't that shocked at the fact that I enjoyed the comedic bits to a high degree, but I was very impressed by the suspense sequences. They are piss your pants level of scary, but they were to the point of creating apprehension in my wanting to continue moving through the hallways. All that to say, I really enjoyed the mix of comedy and terror in the 6-hour game quite a lot. They currently have a Kickstarter going on for the merchandise if you're into that kind of thing. I've already personally funded the highest tier because the figures are pretty rad. They're also supposed to be coming out with a new mode early next year, which I'm very excited for. As I said, it is only 6 hours. If you're playing it straight, do yourself a favor and play. Oh, this number one. Yes. And my game of the year goes to one of the best visual novels I've ever had the luxury of reading, Seabed. It's honestly very hard to describe just what I like about it, as it's more of an experience than anything. It's a story of two women who love each other very deeply, going through their own inner trauma. It's a slow burn to start things off, really setting the vibe and expectation of the story beats going forward. Seabed never really tries to shy away from what's going on. It just doesn't give you quite the full picture. A large portion of it is trying to piece together the timeline of events, really deciphering what is real and what isn't. That being said, after the first third half of the read, it kicks into gear. I specifically remember loving the butterfly scene. If you played, you know what I'm talking about. From then until the end, it's just gut punch after emotional beat after traumatic confirmation after bitter truth, culminating all up into a very pleasant phone call. Oh, it's the most I've cried all year.
Oh my god,
dude. I still haven't really gotten over it. To put it as best as I can, Seabed is one of the most grounded and human feeling experiences I've ever had, really putting you into the mindset of two of the main characters. You go through the motions with all of them, delving very deep into their psyche on how they've been feeling, and even more into the why of it all. And by the end, you've got yourself a wonderfully tight-knit journey featuring two characters moving on in their own separate mystical ways. I know a good bit of you have already read this, and I'm pretty sure some of you could talk about it much better than I, but if you haven't, please do yourself a favor, read Seabed. That's my list. Hope you enjoyed it.
Oh man, that phone, just that phone call scene, just thinking about that just got me misty right now.
Dang.
Yeah, no, it's real fucking good.
Oh man, Seabed is really good.
I thought
really
I was gonna be the
good.
One to cry.
No, oh. I was just sorry. Seabed's really good, Rhett.
Yeah. That's a good one. Beautiful vision on there. All right, I have a list, and this comes from our good pal. He says, "Hey, Soxcast, guess what? It's a Tom list again.
Yay!
You know what that means. Okay, Tom. I know I'm cheating, but I'm making this short. Xenoblade X Definitive Edition is the actual game of the year, but since it was game of the year in 2015, I'm excluding it anyway. All right, number three, Rune Factory Guardians of Azuma. I had a time actually getting this game in my hands this year, but fortunately it turned out to be an incredibly good time that continues the nature and community positive worldviews of Rune Factory while continuing little plot threads from 3, 4, and 5 in a very cute way. While there is farming and dungeon crawling, it's primarily a town builder and light management sim in disguise, and it's incredibly fun. Play it in hard mode for a little more challenge. Number two, The Legend of Heroes Trails Through Daybreak 2, Crimson Sin. I was a little lighter on Daybreak 1 than I thought I'd be, but this game put both it and the Trails into Reverie into even more perspective as to what they're building towards thematically. Basically a follow-up to Reverie in every way structurally, and a lot better, too. The plot goes on a lot of different directions, but focuses on character development and interaction more so than the actual overall series plot. Which do you really need that?
Yes.
And centers around one major mystery that culminates into what's probably my favorite boss fight of the year, the most fun game in the series yet, and I cannot wait for Beyond the Horizon in January. And is number one, you've been paying attention at all. This is no shock to anyone. Number one is Cosmic Fantasy 2, Cosmic Fantasy 3, and Cosmic Fantasy IV, which culminates into the Cosmic Fantasy Collection 1 and 2. First off, both of these collections are way too expensive for what they are. You know they're overpriced when they were cheaper through limited run games with shipping. Mm. Cosmic Fantasy is a Telenet-produced, LaserSoft-developed PC Engine RPG series that ran through 1990 to 1994. I wound up playing the first game last year and talked about it then. This year, I wound up playing through the rest. All of these are fairly simple RPGs with interesting ideas for battle mechanics that don't always work. The balance of CF3 is wildly in the player's favor later on. However, these are all games with a lot of heart, a lot of good plot progression, and a lot of good smut. Always important. While this isn't a Trails in scope, it is in character development and progression as we see the main characters grow, learn about each other, themselves, and their place in the universe with each other. The endings of Cosmic Fantasy 2 and 3 hit hard. This is a series I'm glad I've played and is one that I'm going to be inspired by for a while. Thank you all for everything this year. Expect a new release sometime soon in the new year. Thomas Jetstorm L.
Thanks as always, Tom.
Yep, absolutely. Nice. All right, Rhett, do you have a listener list?
This one comes in from Last Zim on Earth. Hi, Zim. Number 3.
Hi, Zim.
Hi, Zim.
Hi, Zim. Hi, Zim.
Number 3, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. It doesn't really do anything particularly new, but it executes on what it does really well. The combat and platforming feel graceful and fluid, with enough challenge to make it all satisfying, with abilities that are used in both clever environmental puzzles and fun bosses, proving that it is, in fact, possible for me to enjoy a Metroidvania. It goes to show how satisfying the game is overall, that the story being merely passable doesn't feel like too much of a flaw in the grand scheme. Number 2, Update the Count Excise.
Jeez!
Fuck yeah.
Another one.
A wonderfully creative bump-slash-combat game that has enough variety in the level and enemy design in the time it takes to get to the end, with a story that is conveyed and paced well within the game structure. I don't really have much to add, because frankly, I think the game speaks for itself in a way that I could never do justice. It's a clear labor of love to the people who made it, and I hope one day to make a game that gives even one person the same feeling I had upon getting to the end of this unsung gem.
Ooh, I don't know. I'd say it's pretty sung at this point.
Okay, so editorialization. Previously, there was Chrono Trigger. The one game better was Excise. Now, what's the one game better than Excise? Okay, back to the list. Number 1, 1000X Resist.
Yes! Oh, yes! We're in there.
Over the years that I've submitted top 3 game of the list to the podcast, this is arguably the most obvious number 1 I've ever had. A narrative game that is equal parts dense, head-tripping, and fascinating. There are moments that have really stuck with me, even as I have forgotten details about the bigger overall plot. This is the kind of science fiction I'd like to see of more of in games, where the genre elements are used to enhance what is ultimately a very human and thought-provoking story. It is my number 1 of the year because out of everything I've played this year, it is likely to be the most rewarding to revisit, to potentially pick up on nuances that I might have missed the first time around.
I'm happy with that. If even one person played that game on my recommendation, that makes me feel good.
Thank you so much, Zim.
Thank you,
again,
Zim.
Again, always a pleasure. Absolutely. Love to see the new faces. Love to see the regulars.
Yeah, we got a good...
We're seeing everybody this time.
Yeah, we're literally like 1/4 of the server. We've got 200 members. 43 lists is literally like 1/4 of the server or some shit. I'm not mathing. I'm not going to math this. Don't you math shame me.
Don't worry.
Don't math shame me. We have another audio listener list. This coming from, well... Who else could we want to hear from at this point of time other than our good pal Chris L, a.k.a. Dark Fairy Rune? So we'll fire that up in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hello, Sox friends. Let's give it up for 2025, huh? No, really. Let's give it up. Please make it stop. Anyways, here's some games. Number 3, Lovely Lodgings Autumn Edition. The Underground Games Collective Domino Club is really cool, but none of their games have truly spoken to me all that much. until Lovely Lodgings. It looks pretty much like your typical Bitsy game at first and sets up a cute little narrative framing. But then, oh, you're making me directly and literally participate in that narrative framing? Oh, that's not a bug. You're actually making me do that on the world map. Oh, this area is somehow even more alien than the last one, which was itself more alien than all the ones before it. The things that make up this game's soul will probably kind of turn most people away, but I found that by nestling into the bed that it makes for me and letting myself get wrapped up in its tiny yet dense stories, and then being forced to express my feelings in-game after such bizarre experiences, I felt a deeper appreciation for all the strange existences that fill our world. Number 2, 1,000 Times Resist. Oh, God. I'm not really sure what to say about this one, honestly. And not for lack of big thoughts and even bigger feelings, but because I don't really know how to do it justice. It's one that I need to replay to fully grasp and appreciate, I think, but it didn't stop my first playthrough from cutting me to my core. It's painful, it's gorgeous, it made me cry live on stream several times. The best acted, best directed, most incisively written game of the last decade is not from a AAA studio with a nauseating budget and over 10 years of production. It's from Sunset Visitor, a handful of theater nerds in Canada who made their first game only because they were stuck at home for a while in 2020 for some reason. 1,000 Times Resist is easily a decade-defining game. And number 1, Final Fantasy X. Yes, Final Fantasy XI. Specifically a private server that replicates the Chains of Promethea era or earlier. I don't recommend the retail version, as it currently is. I played countless hours of this game in the early 2000s. It was already a life-changing and taste-defining game for me, and I already knew it was one of my all-time favorites. Long story short, I returned to this game kind of by chance, and it let me reconnect with a childhood friend who I originally played the game with back in the day, while also forming a new friendship with fellow SMPS member Azalea. This game is littered with friction at every turn. Basically no quests to guide you, imperfect maps, EXP loss and leveling down, slow recovery, shops with actual operating hours, no easy money and everything is expensive, mobs that will destroy you from the very start. I could go on and on swooning about all of that, and more. All that stuff only makes the game hard if you approach it like people normally approach MMOs, hastily and with eyes only on the end game. FF11 wants you to take it slow, think and plan, look at your surroundings, and, unlike nearly every other MMO, actually fucking earn your way. Savor in the journey and the struggle. I've always worried that nostalgia is the only reason I remember the game fondly. But by playing it in 2025 with both an experienced friend and a friend coming into it blind, I know it really is just that good. There was an extra joy in surprising Azalea with a bunch of discoveries, some of which I kind of planned special reveals for, and some of which happened naturally. So yeah, not only does FF11 remain firmly in the top of my all-time favorite games, it also has let me reconnect with an old friend and form a new treasured friendship. All while sharing the joys of the far superior Final Fantasy MMO. Some quick honorable mentions. Final Fantasy X, secretly tied for my second place with 1,000 Times Resist. Definitely in A tier, maybe even S tier Final Fantasy. I loved it. Discover the World by Sylvie. Vividlope. Super Tenpin. And Brandish the Dark Revenant. And one last thing. I just want to thank all of you in the Sox community for your support with my game Excise this year. You all saw me start, struggle through, and release the game over the last couple years, and it probably wouldn't exist without you all. So thanks. Much love.
Wow.
That was
leave it to the audio guy to make a
with the production values.
I feel like there was some, like, I feel like each one of us would have should have known the game, because I feel like the Domino Club game, like, you would have heard the music.
And, oh yeah.
And then I heard the first few notes of the Thousand Times Resist song and just immediately popped. And then I feel like Rhett would have maybe through osmosis remembered the final.
It's been a long time since I played Final Fantasy XI.
But it was funny that it was just each one of those choices was something we could each relate to.
I actually got completely swerved there. I'm like, yeah, Final Fantasy X, banger. And then he adds the eye. I'm like,
Yeah. Chris played a lot more Final Fantasy XI than I thought anybody would want to play in their life.
Lovely Lodgings is a Lovely Lodgings. Like, I know y'all are reacting to Final Fantasy XI. Yeah. Lovely Lodgings is a bold pick. That is the one where I played it and was immediately entranced. And then I realized what it was asking of me. I was like, oh no, that's too rich for my blood. So that is not only a Domino Club entry. That is a particularly cool, challenging Domino Club entry. Very good choice, Chris.
All right. So back out of the mines we come, and we have number 7's coming up. John, what you got for us?
That's me? Oh, fuck. Yeah. fuck. This is the one where I went through my list and went through my my spreadsheet and was like writing down all the games I needed to consider. And I just breezed over this one for some reason. So then like last minute in the last like couple days, I needed to like rethink the order of the list and whatnot. Mm-hmm. This was The Perils of Princess Christina, A Chorus Guide.
This is good. This is good.
This might be my favorite. It's maybe it's recency bias. This might be my favorite Tom game. Cause I love Tom's big magnum opuses, like Chorus 2, but I really like it when this is a punchy 2-hour platformer that tells like the same kind of story as Chorus 2, but gets it across in like a little, more compact package. It's not an RPG. It is a, pure strain, like adventure platformer. With just like a number of cute stages, and it's a little bit nonlinear. It's sort of like that, I don't know, that Monster World energy.
Yeah.
I just really like this one. I think it's really cute. I think the smut's fun. I think because it's a peril platformer. Of course. There's each scenes for every different kind of enemy, any way you can die. and I think his pixel art is extremely on point. I think the feel and play of it is really on point. I just think it's my favorite Tom game right now. Jetstorm4.itch.io.
It's the small, tight, punchy one, and it's just like, oh, that's the John energy, I think.
It's the John energy. Yeah. And guess what? Tom's working on a purely linear platformer for next year. It's not even an RPG at all.
Very nice.
I'm very excited.
Nice.
I love John, Tom's big opuses.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think that's even the case for me, is that I think I've enjoyed his smaller games a lot more. I like this one. I liked the I can't remember. His subtitles always throw me off, but it was a solo Chorus game.
Lost Princess and Spring of Earth.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I like that one. I tend to always connect more with his smaller work. So yeah, I like this one and I like this one a lot.
I think my favorite before now is the original Chorus. So I feel like this gets to that energy in a really cute way. So Tom, you have, Tom is like, I have a ton of brilliant game dev friends, whose games I deeply enjoy. Tom is one of maybe the one friend where I will actually like, he has a game to, he's like, hey, can you play, do you want to play test this? And then I like go home and play it that day. I'm not like scheduling like, yeah, I'll do it this weekend or whatnot. I'm just like, I want it. I hope this doesn't make anybody else feel jealous. It's just like, that is there's something lizard brain with Tom's voice that really resonates with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah. Of all the game devs in our community that I think inspire me the most, I think it's Tom, because he's just so, he makes it seem effortless.
And joyful.
And that makes me, you know, like, that's one of the big reasons I jumped into making my next big game, was just kind of seeing him doing the things he was doing, especially with the Christina game coming together. And that's really why I wanted to get in and try something new with the Synchro Dash. And like, that's why that game exists, is because Tom just puts out this energy that is very, very infectious and easy to grab onto. So yeah. Big fan of Tom's games.
Literally, the biggest project I've ever released was a Chorus fan game last year. Yeah. it's something there, just pokes right in my brain. Mm-hmm. Power of Elf Girls.
I mean, yeah, unprotected as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God,
we love you, Tom. All right, Polly,
my number seven. So with my number seven, I had a game here for a while, and I had to go with my heart. I'm sorry, Chris. My number seven is Uma Musume Pretty Derby.
Nice. Mobile game of the year.
Mobile game of the year. Horse Girls kind of happened in a big way this year. I didn't expect this game to end up as big as it did. I don't think 5 years after its release and finally releasing the global version, I don't think Cygames was prepared for how big of an impact this game would have.
Was prepared.
Nobody was prepared. Like, Forbes was covering Uma Musume.
The Yakuza certainly wasn't prepared.
No, they weren't.
They're like, oh fuck.
Like, I know more people playing this game right now than any Hoyo slop that's being, you know, thrown around. And I know even more people like myself that aren't plugged into the gacha ecosystem that are playing this game. And even,
I got seduced.
And even more surprising, there's an amount of people that I know that play this game that just started playing it cold without any knowledge of the anime or the series or anything. Like this, it just kind of became ubiquitous. Like, I know people at my doctor's office that play this game, and they're just like responsible adults, and I'm just a slob. So they're doing the thing that the slob does. But from top to bottom, I just think this game has fantastic hooks all over. It's got a genuinely fun run-based sort of princess maker training game plus roguelike career thing that's easy to pick up with play and learn. It's got a never-ending cast of super cute horse girls, all based on real Japanese horse, you know, racehorses.
Yeah.
And they're all so exquisitely and meticulously designed in ways that it would blow your mind if you actually dug through their actual race. Like if you look into their actual race attire and the ways that it ties to their real-life counterparts, it'd blow your mind because everything is considered, and it's crazy. It's easy to play completely for free. Mm-hmm. I've not spent a dime on this game, and I have over 100 hours playing it.
God in heaven.
I was wondering if you spend money when you're like, I'm doing a stream where I'm rolling for a character.
I have literally not spent any of the free premium currency that they have given since launch. And I've not spent a dime. Not even for like a battle pass thing. And I bought the battle pass for Star Rail a couple years ago, where they give you, you know, you get extra login bonuses and stuff and premium. No, I've not spent a dime on Uma Musume, and almost everybody I know that plays this game has not spent a dime on it, and they're still having a good time. I think this game's biggest secret is that it has immaculate writing for its story and characters.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned that. I wanted to bring it up.
I am continuously blown away by how much I genuinely laugh while playing this game, or how invested I get in a girl finding her strength to believe in herself, or any sort of, like, and the amount of text in this game is kind of impressive because there's like 40 characters and they've got to write like not only their main story banner where they're telling a main story in these big chapters, but they've also got long stretches of story in each career mode. And there are now two career modes. the absurd amount of content in this game that is just there for you to read and enjoy is incredible. And it's also well produced with like full cutscenes and like visual novel sequences that have very highly emotive 3D models.
They're so cute.
It's so fucking adorable.
The way like Goldship emotes and animates is crazy. Oh my god.
Yeah. And everybody gets that treatment. It's just crazy. And like it's all fully voiced, and like all of the characters also, like all of those voice actresses, because there's concerts in this game that are all fully mo-capped and professionally shot. Every voice actress has to have sang every song because you don't know who's going to win every race. So they've just, the contingency is every girl sings every song.
That's crazy. I completely forget about the idol part of this every time. Yeah,
it's insane. And it's wild seeing how this game has affected people. Like, people really dig into the histories of the real life horses now. And in some cases, they've even been able to visit retired horses. Like, that's so cute. There's also obviously the fandom fell in love with Haru Urata and her story.
It's so cute.
I think that it's so sweet that the end of her life got to be such a very pleasant thing, and that like a community came together to like show this silly little horse that like was a big thing in the 90s and 2000s. And like at the end of her life, they like literally found a way to send her enough grass so that like the farm that owned her doesn't even have to resupply for like another year or two. And I personally know someone that went to the Breeders' Cup in California this year. So like, while I don't love the horse racing industry, I think it's kind of neat that this game has inspired so many people to dive into something that wasn't previously anywhere near their wheelhouse, that isn't 100% tied to the game. I think it's sweet that, like, these actual racehorses, alive and dead, can have their legacies live on and preserved somehow and appreciated by an entirely different audience. I think that there's something really cool going on there that can take root and make people continue to look for things outside of their comfort zones beyond Uma Musume and horse racing. It's rare to see the internet care about something and it not be in an ironic manner.
Yeah.
So I think Uma Musume is really fucking rad, even beyond just the anime and the manga and stuff. The game is really good. And like what it's inspired, like it's a great game made by legit horse racing sickos.
Yeah, truly.
And it's done, it's done more than just be a numbers go up video game for a lot of people. And I just think that's neat.
That's really nice.
I think what I've heard about this one that stands out about it is that like there's a lot of gacha games, and there's a lot of them have female characters, and they kind of become disposable and replaceable at a certain point.
Yeah.
And Uma Musume like is so focused on the characters in every aspect.
They are your babies. You love that. Like Rice Shower is literally my precious daughter, and I will protect her with my life.
But, like, the way the character stories, their personalities also tie into the gameplay, like, the way you want to raise them. Like, not everyone's the same. Like, Bakushin is just raise speed.
Just go
because
speed.
Because she's a dumbass. Just go as fast as you can.
Head empty. Go fast.
Whereas, like, Rice Shower will be moody.
Bakushin is so fun. I have to just tell this one little anecdote. She wants to run a 3,600-meter race, but she's literally only just built for speed. And you as your trainer have to tell her, like, honey, you can't. You're not built for that. And she gets depressed. So you instead enter her in 3 1,200-meter back-to-back races, and she loves it. It's such a great, like, the game is just full of absolute silliness like this. And
that's so cool.
So adorable.
But they make it land because she's actually super thankful for it, because it lets her appreciate what she can do. And like, that's like, again, little character moments like that, they matter. And, like that stuff feels so good. And
Yeah, like, I can't say enough positive about this stupid gacha game, you know?
We're moving it up a few spots.
Yeah, like, number four now. I think Star Rail got number 9 when I played it.
Yeah,
so hey, you know, Umamusume getting to number 7, mm-hmm. that's pretty crazy. Because, yeah, again,
I've seen people care about the characters in a gacha game in this way.
Yeah, like,
where it's not just, she's super hot.
Yeah, like, there's not a lot of that in this community. It really is a lot of just, like, them wanting to, like, you know, like, enjoy the characters' stories, their interactions, their relationships together, you know, like, just to see all that celebrated in it. For the most part, it be very wholesome and sweet.
That's really nice.
You know, it's just, and I think that, like, that sort of, you know, I think that, like, the Japanese kind of look at the West and that, like, we would be the ones kind of cranking out that kind of stuff. And even, you know, they've just kind of been like, I'm surprised at how respectful the Western audience has been.
I mean, Japan has no room to talk. They definitely forcefully stamped it out.
For sure.
Over
for sure.
There
they had to. Yeah. 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 For sure. But, you know, it, I think that that's a cool thing that, like, that's,
yeah,
a lot
but the
of
game a lot, supports it.
That a lot of the love that comes from Umamusume is just this very wholesome, like, wanting to learn more or wanting to just celebrate the cute aspects of it. And again, just a real solid little, like, simulation game at the center of it all that I have a lot of fun with. So, yeah,
I really love that.
Gold Ship becoming, like, the 2025 meme of the year was not what I expected.
Yeah, hell yeah. We love Gold Ship.
Do you remember when I watched season 1 of the anime and we just laughed at it for like 20 minutes?
Yeah, like, that was, I remember when it first appeared on the Soxcast, we literally, you're trying to get through describing what this show is.
Yeah.
And we're just dying laughing because it's the stupidest sounding thing. And here we are.
And now?
Like, what, 5-6 years later, and it's like, oh yeah, like, no, this shit is legit and I love it with all my heart. So that's my number 7.
Beautiful. Fucking beautiful.
Rhett.
Okay, so I've noticed a trend on my list so far, and this will be the last one in that trend, but so far it's been like Ace Attorney Investigations, the second one only, Cyberpunk, but the DLC really, Witchspring, the remake. So my number 7 is Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe.
Yeah, in there. Kirby's in there.
This is the most game to game besides, like, probably Kirby Air Ride. There's just so much here that I enjoyed all of it. I've talked a lot about it where, like, the main campaign is cute but a little easy, and then you replay it again, and then, you know, it's properly challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a new fun boss fight in there that really surprises you. But then there's the stuff they added, like tons of just weird, like, mini party game stuff that I actually enjoyed doing all of. Magalore epilogue, which is this fun little combo based run thing where, like, he starts so weak where it's like you can shoot one lightning bolt like every 2 seconds, like a really aggravatingly long delay. And then by the end, you're just like a DMC character of combos and like ways to speed up lightning bolts, like blasts, just screen clearing stuff. And then when you beat it, they're like, hey, do you want to push your powers even further? And I'm just like, oh, geez, like, how crazy does it get by the end? Going for like S rank. Yeah, you have to get like platinum medals on every stage, which isn't too hard, but it does make you replay a few of them. Then there's the true epilogue, or not true epilogue, the true arena stuff, which definitely one of my moments of the year when you get to the very, very end and the true final boss drops an apple. And it's the only healing item like a boss drops in the entire true arena. And then there's a whole new final phase. And you're just like, what? The music changes. Kirby helped me in the background. Holy shit.
Oh.
The fact that they hit it so well.
Duskete.
Save me. Yeah, it's in Japanese. But when I realized what it was saying, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, this game just is really good, Red.
Yeah, the original is really good, I'm sure, but like the stuff they added to Deluxe is so classy and really
100%. Yeah, it sounds like a great update.
I really like the two powers that they added, the sand power and the mecha one. Mecha is so fun.
Yeah. So like, all the powers.
Ugh. They added, I think two of those, they added new, like, what are the challenge rooms for each ability? Like, they added ones, a few new ones as well. I know John got really into those.
Oh, God, yeah. Really into the challenge rooms, got all the gold medals.
Yeah, was this on your list last year?
It was not. I played it this year.
Oh, okay. Anyway, shit.
Nice job, Rhett.
I played a lot of good games this year. You I don't did. Know, you know, look, wait, I like
yeah, we'll see.
I like this game a lot. But, you know, yeah. It is like it's a Nintendo game. Yeah. It's whatever, but
it is a Nintendo game.
It did feel like the kind of feeling I took away from it was like this was the Kirby game that has like major storytelling panache.
Mm-hmm.
And also like that really good Kirby Superstar action where you have all your moves are like these crazy fighting game move sets. Mm-hmm. You can do these crazy, these wild movement setups. I honestly was just like kind of got not like Trails chills, but like, you know, like Ease 6 chills from the finale of this one, like the good old fashioned Falcom game chills, just to draw everything to our favorite point of comparison. It's like, this is a good video game story. This is a good
one having that moment and then going even further.
If for the remake,
it was so cool.
Nuts. That's so good.
Yeah. And like Magalore, his moveset by the end is probably like by far the most complicated and like diverse.
Yeah. This was just a really fun time.
The way you talked about it was obviously like, oh, I've got to play this on. Just kind of picked it up immediately.
Didn't you play it after Forgotten Land?
Yep.
Oh.
total fair trade-off.
Sorry about that.
No, totally fair, totally justified. But yeah,
that's funny.
I really like this one. That's my number 7.
Damn. That's, yeah. I love hearing you all talk about that game. That's so good.
It's a good fucking game.
All right. So we're going to head once more into the mines today. Can you
once more into
it?
The breach.
Once more into the breach. John, I do believe you've got a listener list. Open it and laugh. Open it and laugh. Let's go.
Not that's the last one by far anymore.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you very much, Durante. Oh yeah, we're fine. Thanks so much for writing in, Durante. It's a pleasure. Hello, podcasters. Game of the year goes to Dragon Quest HD 2D. Admittedly, a protest vote. I had absolutely no idea E33 would be my gaudy vote, unless DQ1 HD turns out to be some kind of insane miracle. And, well, here we are. Expedition 33 is on my list, but DQ1 HD gets my top spot because it did exactly what it needed to update the core concept of the original game into something more fun to actually play rather than visit as an obligation to historical knowledge, like a trip to Antietam Battlefield. Fuck, that's funny. The battle system in this solo character RPG is delectable, fundamentally shifting the focus of the game from grinding to a game of strategy. For a solo character RPG to feel this modern is a testament to the collected wisdom Dragon Quest has built up over decades, all funneled back to the source. Sorry. The expansions to the script are also a resounding success. Especially nice is the rewritten role for Princess Gwaelin, who still gets to be a classical damsel in distress to suit the core heroic fantasy. At this point, GQ1's a straightforward indulgence of that trope sets it apart. But upon being rescued, then also acting through a necklace she gives to the hero oversees his quest, at least once interceding on his behalf and interacts with the other characters in a way the silent protagonist cannot. The original Dragon Quest has been reduced to something of a curiosity over the years, but the fresh approach to the design of the hero's moveset here really serves to prove that turn-based combat with a solo character can't just work, it can be even more enjoyable than the modern party dynamics we've come to expect. On top of that, it comes with a really good remake of Dragon Quest II, which is about as well-written as this Dragon Quest I remake is designed. Wouldn't be my gaudy, though. But if the protagonist is silent and we're supposed to express ourselves through them, why can't you play as a girl? Good question. I like DQ1 a lot. I think the Game Boy Color SNES versions are perfectly playable and delightful and not just homework. I want to play the NES version soon. I like it a lot. The remake of 1 and 2 sounds very classy as like kind of working within the shell of the old games to basically make a new good Dragon Quest games from what Durante said. That sounds delightful. Runner-up, Clair Obscur Expedition 33, a second mention, still trailing behind Excise.
Number 10.
Sometimes a game is just self-evidently an all-time classic on the day of its release, even if it doesn't immediately become a personal favorite. The biggest thing proven here is the most important thing in RPGs is the constant influx of new perspectives. The function of items, the unique character building, plus the fresh coat of paint, both aesthetically and in narrative genre, that would be aesthetically unique in the Japanese or Western role-playing sphere. I'll let everyone else happily speak on this one, though. Shoutouts to Ben Starr. When it comes to English language VA for RPGs, it's his world, and I'm happy to live in it. Honorable mention, Trails in the Sky FC remake. I'd kind of feel like an asshole if it wasn't here. Crazy good battle system that carries this one. Never got around to it. Death Stranding 2. Catch Death Stranding starting every Monday on Death Stranding Strundays at twitch.tv/CHORBYSP. That's CHORBYSP. Featuring myself and my Do Everything co-host Solon S. Scott 3. Games of the past. Holy shit, have y'all played the first two Tomb Raider games on PS1? Shit was peak.
Those were fun. I like those games still.
I want to come back to Tomb Raider 1. I was very impressed with it up front when I realized how big it was going to be. I kind of
It's a long game.
Yeah, it's an adventure. One more thing, the true ending of Dragon Quest II made me cry, so yeah, I'm still not sure Be My Gaudy as an overall package, but Dragon Quest II wins the Made Me Cry Award of 2025. Thank you so much for writing in, Durante.
Absolutely. So I've got a very special list that to dive into. This one comes from our good pal and favorite listener, Don1991. Ladies and gentlemen, is now officially a Game of the Year podcast. And I need to say up front that if ever there comes a year where Don does not submit a list, that will be the final year the Soxcast ever does this. No pressure. Hello, dear members of the Soxcast. And John. I was delighted to see the Soxcast podcast back this year with so many new episodes. In this rough year, you were one of the lights in the darkness. I'm not even going to blame John this year. He hasn't murdered a podcast for a while. Not that the end of the year is near. Now that the end of the year is near, we can all come together and have a few fun end of the year lists. Just a few of them, though. There's only a few.
This was one of the first ones. This might have been...
No, the first one was Gash. Gash came in first.
True.
So, here is mine. Number 3, Dragon Quest III HD 2D Remake. Despite the clunky title, this is a fun take on an RPG classic. You can create your own party with whatever classes you like, so you can have a team of four heroines kicking monster ass across the land. The story has some surprisingly somber moments of death and tragedy, but it never feels mean-spirited. The remake knew what things to flesh out without overbloating it. Number 2, Shinobi, Art of Vengeance. Now, this is a great sequel to an infamously hard action game series. We have beautiful 2D animation, a character with a ton of fighting and movement abilities that slowly expand over the course of the game, a few drops of exploration in the levels, and some crushingly hard challenges if you actually want to collect all that stuff. Number 1. Vampire Survivors? I'm not sure about that one. We should do a drug test or something. Is it addicting? Yes. Is it more? Yes.
It is more than addicting.
It is more than addicting. Thank you. Thank you. has it elements of gambling? Yes. It has all the blinking and flashing lights of a slot machine. Has it saga content? Yes. Sadly, yes. It has saga content. But this is a bridge too far and too obtuse. Vampire Survivors is disqualified.
Gasp.
Off the list. Off the list. Real number 1. Donkey Kong Bonanza. It has been a while since the last 2D Donkey Kong game, and even longer since the last 3D Donkey Kong game, and then this comes out swinging and breaking the floor as well as the entire rest of the level. fun, fair, fast-paced, and full of collectibles, which you can get at your own pace. Pauline is probably the best reinvention of a Nintendo character. Whenever Donkey Kong takes a rest, she has those adorable one-sided conversations full of silly kid logic, and she has the power of magical songs on her side. Even better, it all ends in one of the most amazingly over-the-top Final Boss Gauntlets of all time. I wish you all a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Even to you, John. Please don't murder any other... Please don't murder another End of the Year podcast. It has been a while. It's
been like 6 years.
It's been maybe, 6 years.
Maybe.
We've
Please
all,
do another one.
We've all... You're just going to goad him into doing it again at this point. Like, next year, like, it's... He's going to do something. He's going to John the podcast next year. You've just kind of set the stage for that. So if that happens, it's on you. All right, Rhett, I do believe you've got your favorite list ever.
You know, this isn't the shortest one of the year.
Surprising, given who this is.
Given it's Garden, who usually just lists three games and no commentary.
Yep.
Okay, so no numbers, just it's actually just four games, but you'll see.
All right.
Of the Devil, Episode 1.
Let's go.
This game permanently rewired my neurons. Dispatch. It's an easy puzzle game in Telltale-style visual novel about loser superheroes, and it's fun, my minor gripes with it, some of the writing aside. Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater. Yeah, I guess it's all right. And then finally, don't buy Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 at full price.
It's like our second, like, don't buy this, or I returned this, or I don't want this of the year.
I definitely did not hear good things about that.
No, it sounded pretty disappointing, and unfortunately, even kind of pretty far out from its release, it just wasn't looking very good for that game. So, yeah, that makes sense. All right. So we have one final audio list of the day, and this comes from a face that we've come to know and love. It's from our good pal, Toad, 22484. So let's hear what tickled Toad's fancy in the year of our Lord Haruhi Suzumiya 2025 in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hello, Sox community. It's wonderful to be talking to you again. Thanks to Polly, John, and Rhett for hosting this amazing podcast every year. I appreciate that, everybody. So I got a pretty hefty list to get through, which is why I'm going to go ahead and put an audio one myself this year. I played so many fun, great games this year. It's pretty incredible, and it's really hard, honestly. Like, I played a lot of great games later in the year. But I also forgot some really great games I played earlier. I do have my top three, but I have many, many honorable mentions that we got to get through first. First honorable mention list I want to get to is going to be the Sox community's indie games. I've played so many of them this year, whether they came out this year or not. I tried to list all that I can remember. And I'm going to go ahead and get through the list now and who made them. First, we got Plus by Polly. Loved it. It's so addictive, so quick-paced. I really got the rhythm brain juices flowing. Rico Fruit 25, of course. Another amazing banger. Yomu Yomu Ball, also by Polly. Awesome game. Polly, I really like the mouse version of it. Almost the mouse version almost feels a little tougher in some ways, but I feel like you'd also get a higher score. It's good stuff. We got The Great Hero's Cat by Azalea. We got Penelope's Gift, also by Azalea. Both awesome games. Everybody I've mentioned here, you should check their games out. Sox community, you need to just keep playing y'all's games. Just keep playing them. They're amazing. Y'all are so talented. We got Facets by John. Expanse.
I said love you too.
I would say Kikai. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Fugitive and Into the Vortex. All games by John there. All have their own very unique twists and turns, and were a lot of fun to play through. Some frustrating parts, and I think that's okay. Sometimes it's okay to have a little bit of some difficult road blockage in that one. We got Chris and Alex games coming up on the list here. Baseborn, Within, Scattered Song, Catching Stars, and The Bug Zone. Played all those games this year, had a blast. Some little tiny ones in there, super cute, and some more meaty ones in there as well. Definitely suggest checking it out. And now, of course, we have Jet Storms games coming up here. We have Chorus, both the Chorus, Lost Princess and the Spring of Rebirth, and Berserker Knight and the Dragon Lord's Treasure Hordes. We played Fallen Star, Moon, and we haven't finished it yet, but we are playing Silas, which is also amazing. And then, of course, we have Getragatog's A Next Level Adventure.
Rhett's
Super Zalazer, super good.
Oh, thank really you. Good.
We got Grumpy Square Friendo and Rika Frute Baller by Empty Eye. And we also played, I want to say it's Azora or Aozora by Iffy. A really fun, neat little RPG. I really enjoyed that. I'm going to keep pushing here as fast as I can. I realize I'm getting a little on our time. XCOM, always a shout out to that. Eye of the Commando. Super fun dungeon crawler on Steam. My friend made a lot of the art in it. AI the Somnium Files, great idea there, Polly. The Crimson Diamond is a great Sierra-based point-and-click. I'd suggest checking it out. Hades, we've all heard of it. I played it this year, and it's amazing. But it didn't quite crack the top three. My top three this year, number three, as we finally get there, is going to be Hollow Knight. Only it's almost 2B almost. Hollow Knight is a stunningly good game, and I highly suggest checking it out. We got our second number two here, Silk Song. I realize I talked way too long through this whole thing, so unfortunately I'm gonna wrap these top five or top three up quickly. Silk Song, beautiful, amazing game, gorgeous. Tough at first, but I think it's actually worth it to push through it. And, of course, the number one I have on this year is a game called Zexion. It is a Metroid-styled game. If you're a big Metroid fan, it's a twin-stick shooter. It has incredible movement. It's got a built-in rando, built-in save states. It was made by a single dev that took 13 years to make it. It is a phenomenal piece. I'd highly suggest checking it out. And I see that I've gone too long as it is, but thank you so much, Sox Community, for having another one of these lists. I love listening to them, and thank you, everybody, who contributes to this. And community, I want to see more high scores this year. You don't have to do great. I just want to see them high scores. I want to see y'all just digging into these games. All right, y'all, thank you so much for having me. Peace!
If we're going to give anybody some slack when it comes to going over, it's absolutely toned because as that list just pointed out, I don't think that there's been a bigger cheerleader for this community's output than Toad.
100%.
Go ahead. When you're listing like 20 of the games that people listening to this have made, like, yeah, you can go as long as you want.
Yeah, man. You can add the floor. We'll give you 10 minutes. Just go. But yeah.
Also, Zexion above the Hollow Knight games is wild.
Silk Song? I know Toad got big into speedrunning the shit out of that game. Once it was mastered, and it's like, oh, okay, this game's kind of just taken over in a way that I completely understand. It's entirely Toad's shit there, man. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like if everybody please go follow Toad on Twitch, Toad22484. Streams literally every day for at least 5 hours. And again, has big into XCOM, has been really branching out into a lot of indie stuff. I've been weaving his, stream up quite a bit with a lot of shit like Danganronpa, and I've got a couple other funny things I'm gonna throw in. Good. But yeah, nobody has supported this community as loudly and proudly as Toad on stream. And it's been a blast watching people get to kind of pop off, seeing their games get played, you know, by somebody with a, you know, a fairly larger platform than anybody, than like I have or anything. So, big thank you to Toad. We love you a lot. You are a shining beacon of positivity in this community, and we could not be more than happy. You know, we could not be any more happy that you are here with us among friends and enjoying, the vast amounts of creativity that just flow from it. So thank you so much.
Seconding on all counts. Well, very well said, Polly. Mm-hmm. Those streams were just pure joy.
Mm-hmm.
Those community game streams.
Feels they good can. When people play your stuff and they're so excited to do so.
Mm-hmm. We love you, Toad.
Absolutely. So we have reached number six. Is it five or
number six?
I don't know. It's numbers, dude. I don't math. You know me.
It's the end of day one for us.
It's the end of day one for us, which means we will be closing out proceedings with our individual number sixes. So, John, would you be so kind as to getting us started on that task?
These things are big, huh? My number six is my only. So last year I had a shit ton of entries that were secret, that were actually multiple entries or collections of entries.
Uh-huh.
This is my only one that's even remotely cheating. But I'm going to put Junkoid and Super Junkoid.
Okay.
I mean, that seems fair.
Honestly. That's pretty solid. Those are really sister games. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are just delightful. These are my first, Metroid ROM hacks in ages. I think the only other one I'd played was Rogue Dawn years ago. And they're just very pretty. They just have a very strong sense of aesthetics. It's kind of a Yume Nikki core, I think, is a good way of putting it. The games are dreams. And I really, really enjoyed the first one. That's like a one sitting game, and where most of it is without a map. It's that one's based on the original Metroid. And it's about like attentively, like all secrets are telegraphed, but you have to be attentive to notice. Mm-hmm. So they I found that. I found it very enjoyable to puzzle out how that world fit together. And then Super Junkoid is just gorgeous. It's more of a normal indie Metroidvania thing. But the art and mood of it is crazy. Mm-hmm. It's so well done. I think it whips the ending a little bit just kind of by the nature of being a ROM hack.
And it having to include the Super Metroid ending.
Yeah. But the meat of the game is just extremely lovely. This got me, you know, paying attention. This is part of kind of the successor to like all the ISO stuff last year.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is an okay segue. Like, there was some rough stuff with itch.io this year. They had like a big community blow up centering around like
adult content,
payment processors, like putting pressure on them to censor adult content. And I'm not here to say whether how itch handled it was perfect or to lash out at them. I'm continuing to use them. I think I still really like itch a lot. But it was kind of a wake up call for me of just like, okay, I kind of want to expand my palette a little bit instead of centralizing like my entire ecosystem of independent game enjoyment around one platform.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is expanding out towards more fan game scenes, and Junkoid and Super Junkoid was a fantastic introduction to the world of Metroid ROM hacks or Metroid series ROM hacks. Mm-hmm. I think these are a delight. I think y'all especially would enjoy Super Junkoid.
That downloaded, actually.
Yeah, so. They're just like good little adventures. And I, for some reason, like I got to play them on hardware on a CRT, and it felt really good. The games felt nice in that format. That's another thing I get to be horny about this year. I get to play a lot of games on hardware thanks to my wife indoctrinating me successfully.
CRTs, so right? You're playing on CRTs.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So those are a lovely pick. I think they're well worth looking into. Polly.
Yo. Number six.
Well, fellas, I have just one thing to say.
Yeah.
My name's Polly, and I like two things. I like running, and I like gunning.
And I have absolutely no idea why I just fell into doing that. That's my brain has a weird worm in it sometimes. It just makes me do weird shit. No, my number six is Iron Meat.
Yeah.
There's been, I think, what I would call a pretty solid resurgence over the years of like Contra and Metal and Metal Slug inspired run and gunners, which is good because Konami and Way Forward do not seem particularly interested at all in releasing any actual Contra games that are good.
Wait, was that actual new Contra game this year or last year?
That was last year. Operation Galuga was last year.
Oh, God. If you ever want to do a fake game of the year number one no one will fall for.
That would have been this would have been the time to do it. Yeah, but yeah. No good Contra games from the actual source for a while, but the indie scene has done a very good job of staying on top of it. There's just lots of good stuff. Super Cyborg, Blazing Chrome. There's one I picked up earlier this year that was like $2. It was really solid that I can't remember. I can never remember the goddamn name of.
Was Valferris in this?
Oh, Valferris is part of the, I would consider Valferris a part of this little resurgence.
Okay, I really like that
one. That game's so good. It's so fucking metal. Oh, it's so meaty and metal. But speaking of meat, Iron Meat is, Iron Meat is literally just a game that wears its inspiration on its sleeve. You pick it up, you press those buttons and you do that jump and you know exactly what you're doing and what you need to do. This game's unique take on the series is really pretty much just in the name. It's humanoid, organic, and metallic and robotic enemies that have been taken over by the titular meat. And that's, I'm not making that up. That's the name of like the big bad in this game is literally just
the meat.
We have the meats.
They're like Arby's, really. They could have gotten an Arby's sponsorship, I think, at some point. Somebody should have hooked them up. Somebody on this game's PR team really fucked up.
Indie games don't have PR. True indie games don't have PR.
Yes, there you go. There you go. The true renegades here. But I think that like the whole meat concept does make for a really just fun and grotesque fusions for enemy designs, and most of them explode into just nice ooey gooey blood splatters. And the level to which the enemy designs are so like corrupted by the meat makes for like a lot of like striking enemies and boss designs. It pretty much like it gives the game a very unique visual identity, I think. Mm-hmm. Nothing really looks like what this game's doing. It sort of reminds me of like the back half of Phantasy Star 2, where every enemy in the overworld and all the dungeons gets replaced by like mechanical and organic hybrids. You know, and this is obviously just kind of takes that to the next level, but I mean, gameplay-wise, you know what you're getting here. It's. I think the impressive thing is that this is a one-person project created over the course of 7 years, and it feels loved on it. It feels loved on for that long, and this is a dude that understands what makes a good one of these. It's not groundbreaking. Like, it's not adding any kind of like fancy mechanics or scoring systems to the formula, but it is very tightly paced. Like the enemy spawns and placement are just, they're surgically balanced between like throwing you a big middle finger, but also this is a game that knows when it's time to let the player just do a lot of cool shit and let loose. Dying isn't always like the worst thing. There's power-ups just kind of always floating around. So even if you die, it's not that hard to get right back in and grab a gun and, you know, that's not just your pea shooter and do what you need to do. I think that like the boss fights are probably like the big showpiece in this game, like just big ass hulking monstrosities. They got real fun attack patterns to learn. And the stages never feel like they get gummed up with too many enemies that take more than one or two hits to kill, too, which I think has been a problem with a lot of people trying to make games like this, is they try to put enemies that need to, you know, they've got a health bar. It's like, you don't need that in a game like this.
Yeah.
Like, this is a game that just, it feels kinetic in all the ways that you like, and I think that this game kind of, like, has a similar kind of arc to maybe Super C.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, so
I feel like that's the big influence here, with the meat kind of being alien in nature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The way Super C progresses.
The way that game...
much more bloodier.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's a much more bloody, fun version of that. Like, my only real complaint is I think the life system is too generous. And, like, so if they...
yeah.
If you finish a stage, like, below a certain threshold based on your difficulty, it just gives you the max starting lives again at the start of the next level.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a fantastic time learning this game to 1cc hard mode, though. Like, it's cool. It's definitely still brutal. Like, even with a generous helping of lives, you know, I'm always going to be a sucker for a good run and gunner that, like, just gets it. And, like, there's a couple more I have my eye on towards in the future that are, like, either in my library now or I'll be getting very soon. And hopefully I'll be talking about those sometime next year. You know, that'd be nice. But cool. You know, what can I say? Like, this is, it's just fucking a great Contra ass game. Great job, Iron Meat. You know, I was looking forward to this one for a long time. And it was nice that after Contra Operation Galuga was just a big fat turd in your underwear, that this game turned out to just be even more amazing than pretty much any Contra game released in recent memory. Like, this is a game that just gets it. This is a dev that loves this kind of game and has studied them very thoroughly. Mm-hmm. So that's Iron Meat. That's my number six.
Nice.
Rhett, would you like to close us out for the day?
Well, we're going back to mainstream town here.
All right. Yeah. Let's go. What up, gamers? World premiere.
Oh, God. Imagine just putting straight up ads in this thing for 40 minutes. So, yeah, this one actually was awarded. I don't think they won, but this one actually was nominated at the Game Awards. Uh-huh. Number six, Donkey Kong Bonanza.
Yeah!
It's second just mention. So much fun to punch everything. That's really, this game is just chaos and, you know, pushing your way forward, finding your own solutions to, you know, the level design. Just like, yeah, I'm just going to punch through that wall.
I'm just going to go through with it, man. Like, I don't know how to I don't want to fucking brain this head empty punch thing. I don't give a shit.
Like, I talked about on the podcast how, like, with Super Mario Odyssey, I thought the fun stuff was the side rooms. In this, I think the fun stuff is just the overworld and, like, the story. The character growth with Pauline, as mentioned by one of the lists, is really cute. Like, there's a big story arc here. It's more than you would expect from a Nintendo game, for sure. The finale, or even not even like the real, like, last three bosses finale is crazy, but like the whole last couple hours, the last couple worlds.
Oh, that's nice.
The pacing in this just keeps escalating. Like, I think like the second and third world, I was a little like, oh, this is a little slow, guys. I'm not sure here. And then
kind of settled into a groove, and then
yeah, there's one world towards the end, like, it's kind of amusement park themed, but also like, I think everything's made out of food. Like, it's a very strange world, but like, it's this big open world hub, and they haven't really had a big, huge level like that. And it's right after you have every power in the game. It's the one level that just says, just cut loose and do whatever you want, because you've got like five objectives across this huge map, and it's just, and you know, the whole amusement park theming, and it's just like, oh, I'm just gonna be here for like 3 or 4 hours, huh? And it's so much fun. And then the end game is much more, you know, like confined and like, hey, you know, straightforward to the point. So it was really fun having a big open area, like right the calm before the storm, I guess. Like, the pacing's really good. There's good story beats. I am a psycho who played it without ever upgrading health.
Oh, nice.
So, like, there's a couple bosses that it was, even the last boss where it's like, okay, I die in two hits no matter what.
Nice.
Let's do this.
Let's rock.
One of the main villains, okay, huge knock against this game is that they fucking released $20 DLC like 2 months after it came out. I didn't buy that, obviously. But one of the things they did is reveal that one of the villains survived the main game, and I'm so mad about that because his death, the way he died in the main game, was so funny. He just gets punched and just disappeared. Just there's nothing left. No mention for the last like 2 hours of the game. Just, oh, that guy just got
just straight up fucking murked.
Just explodes and there's nothing left. And it's like, hey, there's a new final boss now. It's just so much fun. Do you guys know at all what happens towards the end of this? I probably shouldn't.
I do not.
I don't know, but it's game of the year, man. Just let it go.
Oh, just. It's so weird to have like this pretty long platformer and then all of a sudden, right at the end, it becomes extremely referential and reverent of the original Donkey Kong games on SNES. Like, you hit me in the nostalgia, you bastards. Oh,
man, you didn't think that Nintendo could still do it, but they did it to you.
It's just really funny because the whole time I was like, those enemies seem a little familiar. Like, there's these skeleton enemies, and then a big thing happens, and those skeletons get replaced with the actual Kremlings.
Oh my god, that's games. So cool.
And when you hit them, they make the same voice samples. Yes! I'm just like, oh my god, how you. And there's a lot more to it than that. That's just the one thing I'll let spill, but I'm like, oh, okay. You guys got it with this one.
They worked for that moment, man. They put in, they showed that they could do things on their own, and then they give you a moment where just hearing makes you pop like so a fucking. Funny. That's so good.
That's so good.
Yeah,
it's nice when the big blockbuster game has like the storytelling gumption to make those big moments land. Like that counts for a lot.
Yeah, and then the final boss sequence is like three in a row. It's like. Excellent. Final boss, crazy sequence, then a harder version of the final, but basically true final boss, true edition. It's very hard for me with three hearts. I think Breloff did a thing too where they skipped one of the transformations.
Oh shit!
Because you can do that in this game. I'm not sure if you can skip all of them. I think people have maybe figured it out by now. Mm-hmm. But there's like one sequence where you have to run across a crumbling road, and it's like. I don't know how you do that if you don't have the zebra. Good luck. Because the zebra goes faster. Like, Donkey Kong transforms into other animals in this game. It's a fucking nightmare. The ostrich one is, like, legit scary looking.
Nightmare fuel shit.
Yeah. It's just, like, Donkey Kong, who is already kind of more humanoid than, you know, an actual gorilla.
Yeah.
But then with a super long neck and, like, feathers. I'm just like, what the fuck is this? This game's so weird in some places. One of the other powers is Elephant, which you just, instead of punching terrain, you just suck it up and you can destroy stuff so quickly. Like, if you just want to inhale an entire level, you can.
I've always wanted to inhale an entire level. This game sounds delightful. Like
there's of the Switch 2 stuff so far, I think there's absolutely a reason why this is the one getting the most recognition and not Mario Kart.
Because this is something that I feel is actually taking advantage of, you know, what they wanted to. Yeah, like it is more powerful hardware. I don't think you could do this game on a normal Switch because of like all the destruction and all of those models that need to go flying. This game sounds like an absolute delight. I went into kind of looking at this game, kind of whatever. But the more that I see it,
is the funny thing.
The more that I see it, the more that I hear about. It's like, man, I would probably fucking have a blast with that game. Actually,
yeah. It's crazy that the destruction at some points makes the Switch 2 chug.
Yeah. Not like, shocking.
The fact that it's like persistent for the entire level as long as you stay there.
Yeah.
So again, with like some levels, you'll be there for hours.
And it's just like the shit that you knocked over like 2 hours ago is just still kind of hanging around. It doesn't just disappear.
One puzzle that I was like completely stumped on, like, oh, find these five, you'll blue coins, which are like actual characters that talk to you. And I was just like, I'm having a real hard time now. I've destroyed like
there's no level structure.
Room. There's no level here anymore. Cause I just love it. Like they're in a maze and I'm just like, inhale entire maze.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, let's works. Do that.
Question mark. Inhale entire maze question mark.
Yeah. This game's really good. The finale's amazing. The story's good. Just now I'm like, it should have been maybe one spot higher.
Ah! You always get that moment.
Yeah.
In the...
Yep. Always yeah. Gonna be one of those.
Always one of those.
Hey, Rhett.
Yeah.
It sounds better than Mario Odyssey.
It does.
Oh, it's definitely.
Yeah.
They took the energy of the finale of that game and kind of
made an actual story about it.
Into the entire actual game out of it.
Good.
I'm not sure if this one has a vocal. Maybe actually, this game definitely has a vocal theme somewhere because the whole thing is that Pauline sings. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, it's very good. I haven't touched the post game since beating it though. That one, I went one back one time. I was like, right. Okay.
Kind of just maybe had enough now.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's fine. We don't always need to engage with everything that a game is doing. That's fine.
I think the downside here is that 100%ing it definitely gets completely exhausting.
Yeah. That's just not something I'm into doing anymore anyway. Yeah. So.
I think the main journey was worth it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So long as you like had a really good time, and at the end of that, you could put it down and say, "Yeah, no regrets, man. That was a solid game." And then it's number 6 on your list. I think it's done pretty goddamn good for itself.
Definitely.
Let's close off with a little more listener list.
because the mines are deep. Sorry,
the mines are real deep. So, like, yeah, little extra bonus content here for you at the end that wasn't originally on the schedule, but we're gonna do it
because we love you.
I just realized it was 5 on day 1 and 6 on day 2, and I went, day 2 is already going to be longer.
All right, so we're going to close the day out the way that we started with some listener lists. John, what you got for me?
Here's another fat one from our friend Angry Ed. Thank you so much for writing in. It's that time of year again where I try to figure out what 3 games I played that I'd consider the best of my 2025, which honestly was a bit difficult since I didn't want to include games I'd already mentioned last year. Regardless, here are the 3 I picked for this year, all of them on PC. Number 1, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, the original. That's right, the original. The swan song of Troika Games, wherein they brought World of Darkness's best-known system into an FPS RPG using one of the oldest iterations of the Source Engine. Playing as a newly embraced vampire, you are quickly thrust into the convoluted and heavily political world of Los Angeles's vampire society, being driven all over LA as you try to figure out who exactly can be trusted, while also uncovering a vast plot that may or may not involve the end of the world. While the combat can be somewhat cumbersome at times, where the game really shines is in the writing, with excellent character interactions and dialogue trees both with major characters and minor. Each clan you can choose for your vampire's background will inform their personality and how they respond in conversation, and some will even have special dialogue options that you wouldn't see in other playthroughs. It's amazing how deep this game can get, easily outdoing Elder Scrolls Oblivion in terms of dialogue direction and personality despite coming out 2 years before. Thanks to fan patches and GOG.com, it's now easier than ever to enter the World of Darkness if one is interested in a janky but entertaining Source Engine FPS RPG. I really want to play the Troika world.
Yeah,
those seem so cool. Number 2, Vintage Story. I honestly didn't expect this game to grab me so well, but it has. Vintage Story started life as a more hardcore mod of Minecraft before spinning off into its own thing. You and anybody you've gotten into your server play a race of seraphims who have been brought in to rebuild the world after an untold amount of time following a horrible disaster that seems to have horribly messed up time and also may or may not have the other world from Silent Hill creeping in on it. Beyond the typical mining and construction in a world of voxels, you also have comprehensive systems for food, cooking, armor, and so forth. The temperature also plays a role, as winters will be brutal if you don't have the proper clothing to keep you insulated. This is without, of course, getting into the other threats, such as horrible demons from the depths and the wildlife, especially bears. Despite all the harshness, I found this game very enjoyable with my friends, and the fact that it's easily moddable has allowed people to insert new character models, weapons, tools, food items, massive ruins, and so on. The game is still very much in development, and I know this kind of survival sim isn't everybody's cup of tea, but for what it's worth, I found myself glad I took a look, and I've now put probably hundreds of hours into the game at this point. The Junkoid of Minecraft.
Right.
Number 3, Sulfur. Sulfur is a roguelike FPS that uses 3D environments with 2D characters. You play a priest who is pursuing a witch that burned down their
church and murder the congregation. Upon wrecking your car, you find yourself in a strange sort of purgatory along with some of your parishioners. From this hub world, you delve into varied environments, taking on goblins, cultists, giants, chain-swinging knights, ninja frogs, and other foes as you try to locate the witch. Your only aid outside of the guns, armor, and scant few melee weapons coming in the form of a talking amulet that is basically your checkpoint system for getting out of a zone if you think you'd rather not risk all your loot. The ability to customize your weapons with attachments both mundane and magical, on top of merchants and storage expansions to find, add to the meta progression. Where this game really shines is the gunplay, which feels very punchy and responsive. And while the levels are made up of pieces randomly slapped together, it is frequently able to create easily workable arenas for your battles against various foes. When I first played the game, the story wasn't complete, but I believe that has now changed, and the developers are close to coming out of early access. Definitely worth a look, and at the time of this recording, 40% off on Steam until December 18th. Well, this is getting released after that, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Thank you so much for the list. I agree, Ed.
That's a solid little list. All right, I have our second list in this. I don't know what I'm doing. Words are happening, and they're just—it's just diarrhea out of my mouth at this point. All right, this list comes from our good pal Braliff. This year, I decided to jump into the vast ocean that is Super Mario World ROM hacks. Over the course of a month, I played over 40 of them, with a few more sprinkled throughout the rest of the year, for a total of almost 1,200 exits. Jesus Christ. For all the wacky worlds I went through, the very first one, A Plumber for All Seasons, is a contender for the best one of the bunch. It might just get beaten out by Peach's Adventure for me, though, an adorable little hack where you play as Peach trying to rescue Mario. The levels are fun and varied, the art style is great, and it has a surprising amount of post-game content. Peach also happens to be built like a dump truck full of oatmeal, which is worth a few points. Mario ROM hacks, getting some good representation. Getting
Mario ROM hacks. Points. It's been a joy watching Braliff's Mario ROM hacks.
Yeah,
just like, that was like every night thing
a while. And it was like right when I was getting into the Kaizo stuff, so that was fun, just kind of like watching that entire journey happen. All right, second one. Earlier in the year, I was also in a bit of a bizarro game headspace, listening to a bunch of Silva Gunner remixes and playing Yume Tuki. But what capped off this period was B3313. This game is the closest we'll ever get to every copy of Mario 64 is personalized. Rooms change with every visit, physical space is just a suggestion, and Mario feels and sounds just a little wrong. The overall atmosphere feels like you're playing one of those haunted beta cartridges from a creepypasta. I didn't beat B3313, but I don't think that's the kind of game you should really aim to beat anyway. It's more the kind of game you just experience for as long as you keep finding strange new things. At one point, I found a switch that re-rolled all the game's random settings, suddenly unlocking the Vanish Cap and Wing Cap. Cool, but it also permanently stole Mario's hat, doubling the damage he took and preventing his natural health regeneration. A real devil's bargain. I ended with 154 stars, 100 of which were collected without a hat. When I used the phrase capped off earlier, that wasn't intended as foreshadowing, but that's a pretty cool coincidence, I think. And finally, the Ode to Castlevania DLC for Vampire Survivors reminded me that Castlevania games exist and are cool. So I played some of those this year. Harmony of Dissonance was cool until I played a second Castlevania game and realized it sucks, actually. Woo! The second game was Portrait of Ruin, which is excellent. It's got everything I want in an Igavania, and I was having so much fun that I tried to punch every boss to death with Jonathan. I only failed against Death himself because he's like 90% immune to physical damage, so I just beat him to death with Charlotte's Encyclopedia instead. It's probably my new favorite Castlevania game.
That's the second time that I thought Vampire Survivors was getting a point to be taken away.
Right? That would have been a real funny unplanned bit to have just happened two times. All right. So, is that it for the day?
I've got a list from Millie.
Oh, you do? Holy shit. Why am I... What is wrong with me? What is wrong with me?
Oh, Millie list.
My brain feels broken. All right.
Okay, we're almost there. Don't worry. Hi, I suck at video games, and this year has been my most gamiest year in probably over a decade, so I had to narrow it down a lot. Three categories with one winner and some honorable mentions each. Yes, it's cheating, but John said it was okay, so get mad at him.
Yep.
Category one, game where you move a little critter or weirdo around. My pick, Excised by Chris L.
Holy shit.
Number four.
Is it only
33? We're on number four for Excise.
Feels more, honestly.
It really does. Yeah. It's come up much.
There's no games reached three yet, so it's still well ahead.
That's crazy. Yeah. Really strong take on bump combat that fucked all my shit all up. A few parts had me on my knees, taking me several hours and dozens of attempts, but the fluid movement and awesome visuals and music kept me going until I let go and found the flow. Now I go back and routinely beat those bosses in arcade mode for fun. Killer. It may have taken me longer to get there than other folks, but I fucking got there. Something unlocked in this one for me.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, wait.
Fuck yeah, Millie. Something
unlocked in this me on this one.
That's the sound Excise, like the same way Luca like opened up Parry Combat. Just when something like cracks in your head in a good way, it's such a good feeling.
Yeah, for real.
Okay, so honorable mentions for category one specifically are Elb by Juneflower, The Ballad of Swishy by Was Not Why Not, The Perils of Princess Christina by Jetstorm 4, Lovely Lodgings Autumn Edition by Sean S. LeBlanc.
Two Lovely Lodging references.
Wow.
Fucking hell. What are their podcasts?
What are the odds?
Fucking hell. So the deal with Lovely Lodgings is that it's a travelogue game where like you leave notes at different locations for other players to find, but you travel very, very slowly across the world map. Your node moves like, so it takes like 10 full minutes on the screen to like move from one location to the other.
Uh-huh.
So it's like there's a sort of meditative quality to it, in addition to the locations themselves being really nice and loved on. And then you get all the bit where you like interact, read the same reviews left by other characters.
Okay. So category two, this year was the start of my shmup era. My pick, Devil Blade Reboot by Shigataki Games. Great entry point to the genre with a satisfying arc and difficulty curve, a gentle ramp up. You can make meaner for yourself the more confident you are. The sick art and music and goofy voiceovers ensure every run is 25 minutes of ecstasy, no matter how bad I fuck up. My first ever shmup 1cc. Nice. Better late than never. There will be more. Stay tuned. Honorable mentions. Blue Revolver Double Action by Stellar Circle. Mushihime Sama by Cave. Mm-hmm. And Esper/Exile by Evergreen Games.
Mm. That's a good one.
Is that last one again?
Esper Exile.
God in heaven. There's so many fucking bangers.
Yeah, for real?
Category three, words type video games may or may not be horny. My pick. Oh, we had to get this rep in here. Chorus Gaiden, Priestess of the Forgotten Hero.
Yeah.
By Twinblade General. Is this another fan game? Oh my god.
Yeah, who can do this one?
The General, whoever they are, crush this. Like, it has everything, man. Adventure, romance, some very bad ends, hype anime-ass moments, and it even had me taking actual notes on paper for one segment. Really cool use of color palette shifts and text pacing for dramatic beats and atmosphere. Just really delighted to experience a lovely story about lovely and not so lovely characters made by lovely people that also put them in awful situations that made me feel real fucking horny about it. Honorable mentions, Tear Ripple / Reflection of Weakness by Middle Sea Software, and Poor Image Superstars by Vita Sunday, and Eight Arms by Kaith. That's all. Thank you for playing. See you next year. Bye. Bye.
Thank you, Millie. That's the second Chorus
Gaiden
reference, including last year there was one. It was from my now wife. So this one feels nice. I think this is one of my favorite things I've made, and it feels really good. Millie was... It was very nice to listen to Billy gush about it.
All right. I promise I'm not going to fuck it up this time. We have our final listener list of the day.
This is the end.
This is the end for real. All right. I still know how to host podcasts, people. This one comes from Sloan TV Band. So we will give that a listen in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hello, my name is Sloan TV Band, and I'm here to share my top free games of 2025. I'm a longtime reader of Socks Make People Sexy, but not a very active community member. Anyways, my first game that I really enjoyed, Mad Max, the recent open world game. I really love the car combat. It's probably my favorite car combat of any game I've played. I think, you know, I'm actually not a fan of any of the Mad Max movies in particular, but I really just liked the setting. I thought it was cool. The next one I really enjoyed was the 2022 remake of Saints Row. I really just enjoyed kind of the sort of silly tone of the game, while it's also just very violent and profane at times. And also enjoyed the commentary on gig economy elements, as someone who has done gig economy work in the past. And the last game I really enjoyed was Mercenaries Playground of Destruction. I really liked the simulation-esque angle and the very open design of the game, where you can just complete a lot of the objectives in a variety of different ways. And there's something compellingly amoral about the game, because you're basically a bad person in the game, but you're not like a mustache-twirling villain. You're just someone doing a very shitty job where you're pitting these countries against each other for your own personal gain. And so I think that's kind of an interesting thing, the way it's tackled in the game. So yeah, those are the games that I've really enjoyed this year, and I'm excited to see the complete list.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Thanks
for the list.
So much, Sloan. It's always fun when you find, you know, people that, you know, they don't necessarily interact with the community, but there are people out there still like checking in, reading the site, or just discovering new things. Like, it's always fun when we get those kinds of lists, because it's just like, man, kind of makes you start to feel like, God, yeah, we have been doing this for like 20 years now. It's real crazy. So I guess with that out of the way, we can start winding down for the day. What do you say? You think it's time? You think we can do it? Do you think you think I have it in me to actually make it through winding down this show with as much as my brain has seemingly fallen apart in the last 20 minutes? Not sure what to attribute that to, but that's gonna do it for day one of our Game of the Year Spectacular. Did you like it? Did you find any new pies you want to naughtily poke your finger into? Well, you got the next 24 hours to absorb it all, because we will be back all up in your ear holes again tomorrow with another absolutely gargantuan haul of that good shit. So, until we meet again, which will not be that long, remember, we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.